All right, I think we're good to go. Let's see, is that? Yeah, that'll do it for us. All right. Yeah, that's not it. That's not right. Where's the joke? Shut up.
This is the Schnauzer Logic Radio Company.
All right, well, we're starting. This is Schnauzer Logic. It is episode number 51. It's being recorded on Wednesday. It's the 11th of April, 2007.
Groundbreaking, critically acclaimed, smash hits, HBO original series. Now, the HBO original series,
Schnauzer Logic.
We're all nervous. We're supposed to have a special guest today. A guy decides to take off early from work and go drinking. He stays in the bar until it closes at about 2 a.m., at which time he is extremely drunk. When he gets back to his house, he doesn't want to wake up anyone, so he takes off his shoes and starts tiptoeing up the stairs. About halfway up, though, he loses his balance, falls over backwards, and lands flat on his ass. This wouldn't be so bad, except that he has a couple of empty pint bottles in his back pockets, and they break. The broken glass carves up his rear end terribly. As he's checking the damage in the mirror, he sees his rear end is cut up something terrible. He repairs the cuts as best as he can under the circumstances, and he goes to bed. The next morning, his head is hurting and his rear end is hurting too, and he's lying under the covers trying to think of a good story when his wife comes into the bedroom. "Well, you really tied one on last night," she said. "Where'd you go?" "I work late," he said, "and I stopped off for a couple of beers." "A couple of beers? That's a laugh. You were plastered last night. Now tell me the truth. Where did you go?" "What makes you so sure that I got drunk last night anyway?" "Well," she says, "when I got up this morning, I found a bunch of Band-Aids stuck to the mirror."
Clinton, liberals, dittos.
I'm Dr. Mora, and I'm my poodle's mother.
Today on All Things Considered to Death, Moss.
Yeah, baby, show me your...
Son of East, my friends. Son of East, and welcome! You have managed to tune in, latch on, and otherwise download that stream of bits known around the world as Schnauzer Logic. This is Schnauzer Logic. It is our big 51st episode, and it's being recorded on Wednesday. It is the 11th of April, 2007. My name is Robin Goldstein. I'm your host. I'm your buddy. I'm your pal. I'm also a straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian paternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual woman patent attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning, and I am thrilled and delighted to have each and every one of you with us for what is sure to be an exceptionally great show. I know each week we say that, and each week pretty much it's true, but this week we're very, very excited. If everything goes right, the stars align, the good Lord's willing, there ain't no meltdown, and Parviz doesn't...
make fun of you?
Well, that's kind of a given, isn't it? We're going to be talking in just a few moments with, literally a legend of comedy. We're going to be talking with Mort Saul. Now, I didn't know until about an hour ago whether Mort was going to be able to join us today, so I was going to put another Jew on, figuring all Jewish comedians are about the same. But we don't have to do that. We got Mort. El Morte. That's not right, is it? That's not even close.
No. But but it does go to show that all Jewish comedians are not the same. So we were going to try and sell you that one had Mort not been available. But now we can just come clean. We don't believe that either.
There you go. And before we get going, we need to say, Son of Easton, welcome back to the Schnauzer Logic Studios, Mr. Parviz Vitali. Son of Easton, my friend.
Son of Easton, my friends. Son of Easton, my friends.
What do you do when you're not here? Do you repeat everything twice for people around you?
I do, because nobody listens to me.
I'm sorry, I wasn't... oh.
So that's the humor I missed. So anyways, I heard last week's show was fabulous.
You have the normal number of chromosomes, right? I mean, you've...
Yeah, I do. 103.
Okay.
I heard last week's show was fabulous. I didn't get a chance to hear it, but I'm very excited to try to outdo my co-host, Steve.
He wasn't your co-host.
He's your guest host.
He was your guest host. He was like, he was the,
He was the Andy Richter, and he's gone now. You understand?
No, that's
a wrong analogy.
That's not right, and it's twice, but you want to go for it one more time? No, he was like Gary Shandling, permanent guest host for Johnny when Johnny wasn't around.
Right.
Oh, okay, and they gave it to Jay Leno.
Not even the music lights me.
No, the music pants you.
The music was so offended. You brought up Jay Leno.
I don't like the sound of this.
There was no sound.
I'm very nervous about this whole thing.
Just don't have the music playing during Mort's segment.
All right, let's...
I don't think that'll keep us safe. But in any case, yeah, he stepped into the breach. It was like that little period where they were trying to get later going with the new guy from
Craig
TRL.
Kilborn.
No,
John Stewart.
No, but you're running out of names of people in showbiz. I know it's a limited time, so we got a couple hours here.
Carson Daly.
Thank you very
much. Carson Daly
Not
show.
Not bad. Yeah. They were doing
which was horrible
later with Carson Daly, and it wasn't available initially because of contract disputes. So I forget they had to put something in there for one of those nights.
Gary Coleman.
They imagined he was it exactly
the mustard guy. son of East Deshaun.
Son of East.
Once you hear Gary Coleman's name, you just freeze.
Well, easy.
Yeah.
But in any case, that's the same sort of thing. There were contractual obligations that kept you from actually attending the program, and so we had to fill in.
And we have contractual obligations to say hello each and every week to Mr. Kip Adada.
That's the guy we were talking about earlier.
Michael's whirling.
Stroke or unload.
Asshole.
Dick Cheney. Harry Whittington.
Dead.
Whitney.
Black.
Kenneth.
Home networking.
Funny.
Sammy.
English motherfucker, do you speak it?
Teacher.
Are you doing it before or after? I can't tell.
I don't know.
Allie Waller. Jerry Seinfeld.
Stop laughing. It's not funny.
And our newest entry in the Hall of Fame.
I'm Brian Cox.
Oh! That's awesome. That's great. Was that me or Brian?
I'm wrung out.
Yeah. I'm here for you.
I'm wrung out.
You work so hard. I'm here for you.
What you people, at in your homes, in your workplaces, working out, wherever you are right now listening to this program, prior to the program, it was like Apollo 13 here. We had
problems.
That didn't end well.
Well, it did. They got home alive.
For Ron Howard's career.
Basically, you know, we had to repair the whole computer system, and all we had was some duct tape and two socks. And yet Robin, being the steely-eyed rocket ranger he is, managed to put it all together.
I'm thinking that we need to have a contest where we find things that you won't laugh at.
What? Wait. Let me get something perfectly straight. Let me get something perfectly straight.
Darfur.
The fact that I'm a happy guy is bothersome.
A nappy guy?
Yeah. Hey, be careful. That hurts my feelings.
Wow. Wow. Yeah,
we'll talk about that. I do have to address something, Sean. I can see you have a coffee cup, Starbucks to-go coffee cup.
And that is correct.
Tape over the lid.
That is correct.
Like Pee Wee Herman in The Big Adventure when he tapes his nose and stuff to his face, correct?
I'm not familiar with that, but...
Okay, my point is, are the lids that crappy?
No, but, you know, I'm driving over the hill. There's a very...
Oh, that's a good idea.
Right, there's a winding road that comes... that's between me, my home, and the studio here. And as a result, lids and cups can go astray. And now I have it on our table here at High Tech Studio, and I don't want, you know, the slightest tip... Could jeopardize all kinds
of... The electronics in here.
Yes. So...
Very nice. Very nice. Very thoughtful of you.
Or your pants.
It is. That's true. Okay. It looks like a cup came off the yellow bus. So anyways, back to my humor.
I know there's stuff that I won't laugh at. I'm just saying.
I love the show. I love you. I love Sean. I'm a happy, happy guy.
And you're a good person.
I am. And I am going to nod off in a few minutes, so we got to wrap this thing up. I tend to yawn about, you know, 30 minutes into it.
Well, what we're going to do is we're going to take our first break right now, real early.
Okay.
Okay? So that will give you time to clear your throat, yawn, expectorate.
How was the Giants game, by the way?
It was terrific. At that point, as Steve said, he's actually been to every game the Giants have won this season. It was the first game that they had won. We had a good time.
Oh, sadly, excellent. Still true.
Excellent.
No, they won last night.
They did.
Yeah, they beat the Padres last night.
Wow.
Benitez almost blew the save in the bottom of the ninth inning. And I think they would have actually run him out of town on a rail. And it's not even his town. But I think just the local fans in San Diego would have done it. But no, he managed to hold on to it. I think that six to five.
Oh, great. Great.
6-5.
All right. It's not a total waste of a season.
Only like seven games into the season. It's hard to give up that early.
Okay. Okay.
But the Giants are finding a way. They have.
I use the same philosophy for the show. About 13 minutes in, this is really like the eighth game of the season. Yeah. It's 162 games long.
The preseason.
You got to roll a little bit longer. I'm still looking for my curveball.
I've got your curveball.
Like I said, there are things I won't laugh at. All right. The music today, brand new Avril Lavigne.
Really?
Yeah. Also, brand new Fountains of Wayne.
Cool.
And we may have a little surprise revisit from Ben Folds.
Cool.
Later in the show. And what we're going to do is take our first break at this point. We'll try to get Mort on the phone with us.
Good.
And then we'll come back and we'll be talking with comedy legend Mort Saul. You're listening to Schnauzer Logic, Robin Goldstein, Sean Meehan, and Parviz Vitali, and we are all inviting you to please
stick around.
Okay, I'm going to throw you out of the fucking studio. This is my fucking showcase show, okay?
Like you said, stick around.
51 shows we've been doing here. You got nothing to say. Nothing to say. This show.
I say stick around.
This show. Why?
Because I love you.
He wants to be like you.
You're trying to undermine me.
You're his role model.
Thank you, Sean. You are my role model. Is that tear in your eye for me?
I'm going to get you.
Oh, I like that.
I'm going to get you. Stick around. So yeah, at last word. Ah.
Ambient technology.
Ah, the technology.
I want to know why you like to dress up like a girl sometimes.
This is Schnauzer Logic.
Get together now.
Nervous from the top of the Empire State Building.
Actually, it's a second bedroom with some bath mats taped to the wall.
And broadcasting loud to all time zones around the world in stereo.
It's a medium bitrate podcast. Oh, and it's mono.
This is
Schnauzer Logic!
Welcome back. We're about 19 minutes into this episode of Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, host, buddy, and pal, www.schnauzerlogic.com. Robin at schnauzerlogic.com. We're also over on myspace.com/schnauzerlogic. We've got a phone number. It's area code 206-666-6540. Let us say welcome back in Son of Easter to Parvis Vitali.
Son of Easter, Robin.
And welcome back in Son of Easter to Sean Meehan.
Son of Easter.
That's new music from Avril. Not bad.
Not bad, but kind of surprising. It sounded very, I don't know, I thought she was more aggressive in her music.
It's kind of bubblegum poppy.
Yeah.
She's trying different things.
But did she have breast implants? Because oftentimes the oftentimes the music gets a little poppier after the breast implants.
Is that right?
Yes.
All right.
Well-known phenomena.
Did you have
breast implants?
Yeah.
Nope. I got D-plants.
I don't even know what that means.
Not everything's funny.
We won't laugh at everything.
You rely on that, don't you?
Absolutely.
All right. So here's the thing, and I got a cop to this, okay? I'm a little bit nervous, right? Especially every now
don't
and
be
then.
Nervous.
We speak to folks every now and then in this show who are legends, right? Legends in music, legend in comedy, legend in theater. And right as we were playing the Avril Lavigne song, I picked up the phone and I dialed the phone number and this voice answered and said hello. And it's this voice that you recognize. It's clear and it's precise and it's exactly who you know him to be. And I don't really know how to give him an appropriate introduction at this point. I was thinking about it before we started the show today, and people say, well, you know, how do you describe Mort Saul? And I said, well, you know, before there was Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert, and before there was Bill Maher, and before there was Bill Hicks, and before there was George Carlin, and even before there was Lenny Bruce, there was Mort Saul. And before Mort Saul, as far as I can tell, there wasn't anyone. Mort Saul seemed to spring full-blown from the hip of Mort Saul.
Well, he is mentioned in Genesis. And it sprung from the head of Zeus, Mort Saul. But you're absolutely right. There is no precursor.
I don't think so.
Mort Saul. There's no antecedent where you can say, oh, that's where he got his bit. That's where he got his act. That's where he got his angle.
And so there's a certain reverence that I say as I push down the button and say, welcome, Mort Saul, to Schnauzer Logic.
Robin, I may lose you because I'm running up the hill here away from the police. So you have the hard line number, don't you?
I think I do, yes.
You got the backup number? So if we go off,
I'll be in
flight here for about 30 seconds, and I'll be at the other line.
Was that the 941 number?
911. No,
you're not the first
person.
It's
the only number I left you.
Then if it's the only number, I'll bet you have it.
I think I do have it. Yes, I do. Would you like us to call you back on that number?
No, that's okay. We'll stay on this as long as we can.
All right.
But when we go around the corner, I don't want you to think I deserted you.
No, I hope it's those chubby donut-eating cops that are following you, because I think you got an edge on them.
All this cell phone logic, because you know what E.E. Cummings said? Progress is great, but it's gone on too long. So that may be, you know, why everybody's got a computer, but nobody knows anything. What's on your mind today, Robin? What's up?
Well, you know, there's obviously lots of things. We talk a lot about the history of comedy on this show, and these days, especially in light of what's going on in the world of politics and what's going on with, quote, political correctness, you know.
Yeah, good point.
Hello? Yeah,
they got him.
I think the cops got him.
I think the cops caught him.
he looked too much like a donut. All right. That's all right. We're flexible. We'll catch him up.
Absolutely. See, there's the bad sound. I think that was an arrest.
That's Kippadada, my friends.
Mort, if you can hear this, that one phone call, you get calls back.
Kenneth, help us about this, Kenneth.
Home network, it is.
Kenneth.
Home network, it is.
I think we need the Law and Order sound now.
All right. Well, tell you what. What you were going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say that it's interesting. It's very rare, in my experience, to find an artist for whom there is no precedent. Because even if you look at, like, the early musical greats, you look at, you know, an Elvis, and there were black artists who certainly preceded Elvis. When you look at, you know, the Beatles might sort of be true originals, but there were a number of poppy-sounding bands. I think what the Beatles became, they grew into their original status.
Right.
There were a lot of other bands in 63 and 64 with that poppy sound. But it is just so unusual to find someone, you know, like a Bach or something like that, who you really just can't look at someone prior to
Bach. You look at Mark Twain, right? You look at Swift, you look at Twain, you look at Will Rogers.
Sure.
And that really becomes the precedent, if you will.
Right.
And to do it in a time when you're talking about hipsters and jazz and this whole awakening, this kind of renaissance, if you will, to just kind of show up on the scene, and there you are with this new art form. I mean, what kind of balls does it take to step out on stage and not, you know, not do shtick?
Right. And I think it was such a, you know, the time was so coercive for artists. The people like the Beats and what have you, those guys were basically saying, look, everything about our Western civilization, it's okay to scrutinize it. It's okay to reject it. And I think that that was a pretty new and exciting idea at that point, because there was an enormous conformity. But coming along with the dawn of rock and roll, the Beats, that notion that things not only could be critiqued and valuably, but should be. And I think if Mort represents anything for me, it's that first voice that said, let's speak comedic truth to power.
Right. Sorry, I was agreeing with you, but silently.
I like to believe.
I was afraid to say right, so.
I like to believe the thunderous silence I hear every day are people agreeing with me silently.
Yes, as you pass through this life, it's just that their microphones are turned off. That's the only. They're on your side.
They are.
They're just. The mic buttons are pushed down. So what I think we'll do is we'll take another quick break. We'll play some more tunage. So that'll give us a chance to try to track down Mort and get him back on. What I said was, especially what's going on in light today, and I think I heard him mention something about Dynamis. Obviously, from a pop culture point of view, that's a story we cannot avoid covering today, especially since as we're doing this show, there are things going on. I mean, we found out literally half an hour before we sat at the studio today that MSNBC has decided they're going to pull the Imus in the Morning show, which is simulcast on MSNBC every morning, and which I watch because I'm an insomniac. I get up and I watch it. They're pulling that.
In perpetuity.
That's right.
It's gone.
At least forever. And so, I don't know what that means. Sorry. Sorry. Do you get it?
I can
write it down for you.
Yeah, write it down. Explain it thoroughly.
All right, that's fine. You'll get your chance later.
Hey, all my jokes are all like fart jokes and Nerf football and marshmallows.
Get ready.
Imus is going to be out for 2 weeks. Somebody's got to fill that void.
I do it here every
and
Wednesday.
I, you're just the spackle there.
Thank you.
All right, so I think what we'll do is we'll take another quick break. We'll play another quick tune here. Maybe we'll play a little something from the guys of Fountain Wayne. Fountains
Good.
Of Wayne. All right, and then we'll try to find Mort, because I do have a couple of numbers for him, and then we'll pick up where we left off. Right.
I hope he's not napping. Wow! 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 That was just for me.
Wow.
Save it for your show. Just save that gold for the show.
Yeah, give it up. There are people that now tune in just for the Parviz Vitali show.
Really? Who's that?
People.
Steve.
They've asked not to use their real names.
But we have a bar graph we can show you.
A man walks into a bar graph. Sorry. Okay, we'll take a break. We'll play some more tunes. What are we going to play here?
Fountains of Wayne. New music from Fountains of Wayne.
Yeah.
For years, I've been doing that joke with a pie chart.
It's so hard to imagine. So hard to imagine that you could be bored of a show that you're part of.
I'm not bored. I'm concerned for Mort. I think he fell and took a nap.
All right. No, he was in a car driving. All right. We'll take a break. We'll be back on the other side.
Even worse.
Okay. Listen, Schnauzer Logic, blah, blah, blah. Stick around.
Stick around for more Schnauzer Logic.
that's when I saw her. She didn't see me. Behind window B, explaining patiently how she needs to see six forms of ID. Oh, tell me now, who do you love? Who do you love? Who can you trust with your love these days? Yolanda Hayes. Yolanda Hayes. Quarter to four, the line's still out the door. I can see in her eyes, she's heard it all before. She's looking alright, despite the bright fluorescent lights. And I wonder what she's like when she gets home at night. Oh, tell me now, who do you love? Who do you love? Who can you trust with your love these days? Yolanda Hayes. Yolanda Hayes. Yolanda Hayes. Yolanda Hayes. It occurs to me, suddenly, she's been here for an eternity. The hours pass, the days go by, but has anybody really tried to cross that line to get inside?
Welcome back. We're 33 minutes into this episode of Schnauzer Logic. Robin Goldstein, host buddy and pal, straight white Buddhist vegetarian lesbian fraternity boy trapped in the body of a recovering transsexual impound attorney with a bizarre sense of humor and a master's degree in city planning, www.schnauzerlogic.com. Welcome back to Parviz Vitali.
Welcome back.
Welcome back to Sean Meehan.
I told you not to do the cryo stir.
I tell you, if I were more of a conspiracy theorist, I would say that the government did not want us to be talking with Moritz Saul.
I would say so.
We don't usually have these kind of technical difficulties. Let's punch out the button and see if it's working now and say welcome back to Moritz Saul.
You know, conspiracy theorist is a phrase the government uses. There are researchers who solved the murder of the president. It was the government to call them conspiracy theorists. Anyway. What were we talking about, Don Imus?
Well, we just started to talk about Don Imus. That's really obviously...
Well, he's a good friend of mine, you know, for many years, all the way back when he was a disc jockey in Palmdale, California, playing country western.
Sure.
When he ran for Congress. when he was on NBC in the mornings in New York.
And that's where I grew up with him, listening to him on NBC in the
mornings. Oh, there you go.
Sure.
But the idea here, see, you notice nobody wants to eliminate the role of oppressor. They just want to alternate it. I mean, the idea that Jesse Jackson would be demanding that he can't make a living, a man of the cloth, Reverend Jackson, Cashmere, as it happens. But, you know, what Martin Luther King said, I have a dream, and Al Sharpton said, I have a scheme. I mean, where are we? We're on the dark side of the moon. You know, Bertrand Russell said that in England, if you became unpopular with people in power, they would go after your good name and your character. He said, but in America, they just take away your right to make a living. He's referring to the blacklist, of course, in Hollywood.
Sure.
But the self-righteousness of all this, you know, in the midst of the hip-hop world, or Howard Stern, or whoever thinks they're hip, you know, the righteousness of it all.
Well, that is what struck me about this. And actually, we were talking a bit about before the show today, there's been a run in the past year of celebrities who have been caught with their foot in their mouth saying things which are politically incorrect or inappropriate and forced to go through rehab for things I didn't even know you could be rehabilitated for. But there is a sense, if you've been listening to the various reverends, that he can't apologize enough. That somehow there is no apology that's necessary. He must lose his job. And I don't know where they get the sense that it's okay for someone to take away, as you say, someone's livelihood. Is this new? Has this been going on for your career?
Well, sure. The blacklist was the first political joke I made at the Hungry Eye in 1953. We were having this tenuous relationship with the Russians, and the joke was every time the Russians throw an American in jail, we throw an American in jail. They can't get away with it. That was the first joke, first political joke up there. Up until then, I was doing like standard, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4. But the idea of this kind of economic blackmail, and it makes people take on a pose of being holy. Actually, the liberals that are looking for Imus' scalp ought to remember that this is what they don't like about evangelicals.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, one of the things that I find just striking about this, I was talking to a young lady the other day, very liberal young lady at my wife's workplace, and she was outraged about this and how it demonstrated a kind of insensitivity to race. And I thought, boy, what a pathetic target. You know, there really are racial issues in this country. There really are people who, large percentages of people who live in poverty, who don't have the economic opportunities.
Well, that's the point. It's not a color war. It's a class war.
Yeah.
But the liberals don't want to call it that because they're afraid of being called communists. See, they'll only go to the love of Jesus. They won't say what he was, which was a socialist.
Yeah. No, I completely agree, and it's funny.
You know, and the righteousness of all this, you know, his what's the other word? Yeah, insensitivity.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is that after the liberals got through with the revolution, there's more tension between men and women now than there was before the revolution. There's suspicion on the part of women that men aren't all they should be. And men growing up with other men are suspicious of women's motives.
And who benefits from this? Because whenever there is that kind of imbalance in power, the question I always ask is who's actually benefiting from this?
Dr. Jonathan Gray.
The guys.
He sells a lot of books based on this.
The guys that have the money in the beginning and are aiming on keeping it, but you know, they can accommodate everything except what doesn't fit their agenda. The liberals, I found at the time, couldn't accept that Reagan's wife loved them because they were at war with their husbands.
Right.
I said this at an open Hollywood party. They said, I can't stand Nancy Reagan with the red dresses, and I can't stand Nancy Reagan and her China, and I can't. And I said, you can't accommodate anybody who still loves her husband. Because the drawing of the war along gender lines, you know, when I was in New York in November, and Woody Allen and I found ourselves watching Abe Lincoln in Illinois on Channel 11. And Ruth Gordon is yelling at Raymond Massey, who plays Lincoln. And she's t- taunting him, and she says, "So you're the great emancipator. You're the guy that's going to save the union?" And Woody turned to me and he said, "Even then?" The great thing about humor is that you can really be as mad as you want to be, which you can't be in the workplace anymore.
And so do you perceive, because I know that you're still performing. In fact, you're going to be in Hermosa Beach tomorrow night,
yeah.
Right? So you're still, you're coming up on a big birthday, we know, and you're still performing. Obviously, you're still involved in what's going on. Do you find that there's an increased, I don't know, tendency, if you will, to take power away from comedians? I mean, it feels like there's been a detoothing of the comedians. Even, you know, when I made the introduction, I talked about Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert and Bill Maher and all of those folks.
Yeah, I heard you.
I mean, we look to them, but it seems to me that they're still playing it right down the middle.
Well, I don't think anybody today is particularly political. Political, you have to grow up the way Jack Kennedy did. You know, he sat at the table having dinner, and his father was political. That's where you hear it all. A strong Irish family or Jewish family having dinner. And all that stuff is dropped by your parents and it starts to shape you. But the comedians think they're being defanged if anybody goes after the profanity. And the profanity is easy. I mean, that's almost banal now.
Right.
You know, you wouldn't know what to say if you did hit your thumb with a hammer. You know, I mean, it's all been said. And, women have lost ground, too, there, too, because they get to be as raunchy as we are, which is a dubious advance.
But if you look at what sort of happened after sort of a post-World War II, if you will, at the point that what you were doing was sort of coming into the forefront, and it felt like we were making progress during the late part of the 40s and the 50s and the early part of the 60s. It felt like we were making progress, and then at some point there was a stalling and then a backsliding, so that there's the appearance of progress. But in fact, from a social point of view, I'd argue that we're actually moving back. We have fewer freedoms today to say and think the things that we want to than we did back when you were performing, you know, I don't know, five nights a week.
We certainly do. Performers always succeed when they say what's on the unconscious mind of the audience. The audience knows all this is true, but they're not poets and they don't know how to say it. You're supposed to be able to do that, or you shouldn't be on the stage addressing them. If they're smarter than you, you shouldn't even be there. But there are less freedoms today, and there are less people stretching them, mainly because they're being beaten with a mallet every day trying to make a living. It's a kind of an economic straitjacket. Kelly Monteith talks about all this, having to have a cell phone and a fax and a computer and two of them, and all of this duplicated. People are just trying to get by, and being aware of the limitations of the government, that the government puts on you, is a luxury, because after all, the political shows that are on really take on the pomposity of government, but not the criminal nature of government.
Are you, obviously you need to read the newspapers in order to do what you do. And
yeah,
I
there's only one left. The New York Times.
Yeah. Do you tune into the TV news, and do you tune into shows like The Daily Show, or does that just kind of make you stuff? Okay.
Well, you know, television news, I mean, look what you got here. You got CNN, MSNBC, and Fox full time.
Right.
And then you've got BBC part of the time,
mm-hmm.
and Al Jazeera, which is on, you know, only nobody will distribute it in America.
Right.
It's on every night. So they're so overwhelmed by the news that they respond by not reporting it. There's no news. It's all about Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes and Britney Spears. And
hey, I know who the father of Anna Nicole's baby is. Don't tell me there's no news, Mark.
Yeah, being well informed. But everybody who quotes anything, for instance, the BBC website 2 weeks ago, Sean Sullivan on there talks about CIA agents being in the ambassador when Bobby Kennedy was killed. That was not picked up from the BBC. Nobody reported it here. I mean, I don't know how many people reported that Halliburton quit Iran today. Of course, you can put it in acceptable form. You can say that Bush goes over to visit with the troops in Iraq and he serves them Christmas turkey, having served the gravy to Halliburton earlier in the year. I guess that would be a corny way to put it, you know.
Well, but you actually you raised thousands of interesting points, but that is a good point. We've talked about that before also on the show. If you look outside the United States, even just limited to other English-speaking countries like the UK or even as close as Canada, you find a broader representation of both comedy, I think, and news and intellectual discourse.
Well, that's true. English, they have had Benny Hill, and they had Noel Coward.
Right.
We're stuck in the middle of the keyboard like Dave Brubeck. You know, it's very limited here. I guess
I never heard anybody take Dave Brubeck on before.
Scared. And there's not an awful lot of devastating, wicked political satire that draws blood.
But they're under the similar kinds of economic systems. So how do we figure out why we're not more like the UK? We're both a capital.
Sometimes people leave. Kevin Spacey went over there and stayed, didn't he? Went over there and ran the old Vic.
You know, it's interesting that you brought up that story about Robert Kennedy and the CIA agents.
Yeah.
I saw that story a number of months ago in alternative American press. That story was actually broken by a guy who was doing research for a film on Robert Kennedy and looked at the footage from that evening.
Really?
And he was the first one to point out that, oh, that is a known CIA heavy. That is a known CIA heavy. It's kind of startling that, you know, 30 years after this event.
Oh, yeah. Well,
you know,
there's different kind of people growing up. I mean, there were the Holocaust survivors, then there were their kids. Their kids are more narcissistic and sort of apolitical, and
he's not talking about me, is he?
The Jewish kids, for instance, who were supposed to have dominated comedy and dominated the left, are not that. They're not that way anymore.
And do you have a theory on that?
Well, yeah. I mean, only what I've observed. I mean, Eastern European grandparents who migrated loved all of humanity. They were very principled. And, of course, if you were their grandson, you might have noticed they don't love mankind one at a time. They're kind of cold.
Right.
You know, it's like Joan Baez. She sang for all of us. But if you had dinner with her, you'd have trouble. You know, if that's what you're looking for, you know. I mean, you know, Joni Mitchell became a legend because they thought she spoke for them. On a one-on-one, I don't know. And the comedians do the best they can with it. I mean, Stewart's got a great gig in that he can dig into it every day.
Right.
All of this would be better if it didn't come from New York or Hollywood, which has got its own society. And
right.
Well, you guys know, you're not here.
No, I mean, we're up north, but I think we're here in Northern California, so we're still affected. I mean, we're on the coast, and so there's certainly a bias. We're here in the Silicon Valley, so you've got a lot of intellectuals and a lot of money that drive the culture around here. You know, we have day gigs to help us do the kind of creative things that we do along the way, so we run into that on a daily basis.
Well, there you go. Speaking of the Bay Area, you know, we just had the Hungry Eye, a sort of a reunion, the opening of the Cultural Museum in San Francisco, brought everybody together.
Yeah,
to celebrate the old club.
Does that bring back good memories?
Oh, sure. The guy that ran that club is one in a million, Enrico Banducci.
Sure.
He was the real McCoy. But look at that town. Look at San Francisco. It went from being Harry Bridges' town, where if you were reading a Hearst newspaper, they'd pick you up and throw you off the pier. And 50 years later, the protest is by gay couples. That's the protest. I mean, that really used to be a dangerous left-wing town. And I certainly couldn't have done it anywhere else. It was a great incubator.
Is it money that winds up corrupting all of these social progresses?
Well, San Francisco looks like it lost the war. Willie Brown, the former mayor up there, you know?
Oh, yeah.
He said to me at the museum, "You should have been here for Halloween. How could you tell it's Halloween in San Francisco?" You know, It's just there are still some islands up there, but it's pretty gentrified. You know, there are an awful lot of lofts built on top of the bodies of homeless people in the Mission, and Starbucks and Jamba Juice. You know, civilization covering itself up. Right in the middle of Skid Row up there, there's a Four Seasons Hotel, the Waldorf Astoria. It's not the town it was, you know. Not the town it was. Everybody's humor has to speak for their own time, you know, and they have to reflect how they get squeezed. I don't think it takes much more than a newspaper, although the web is pretty amazing. I mean, that you can get in touch with a kid anywhere, but I guess maybe Burma, who has the same concerns you have.
Well, and so is that still how you get? I mean, tomorrow night you're going to be performing. You basically, just go up on stage with a red sweater.
The New York Times.
New York Times and a sweater.
And a blackboard. I have a blackboard with magnetic heads.
Oh, you've moved into the 21st century.
You know, and like that, you know. Then just try to take it. What you're really doing is taking something in commonality. Like we all know about Alberto Gonzalez, and you try to put a little different spin on it. It's like a cutaway photo. Try to show them a part of it they might have overlooked, or maybe they haven't been privy to.
Does the audience smart enough? I mean, do you have to educate them more today than you might have had to educate them?
Yeah, well, I cheated, of course. You know, I said, well, you all read that Monica Goodale just resigned. I don't know whether they did or not, but I hope so. You hope, but you know, they've got their own suspicion. You know, I was with Jim Garrison in New Orleans for 10 years, and I don't know what we accomplished. I think maybe we planted a seed of doubt.
Well, this is something that we really wanted to talk to you about. I mean, this is an extraordinary event. You and JFK were friends.
Yes.
And obviously, his untimely death sent you on a pretty extraordinary journey. And what was that like? I don't know what the results were sociologically, for the work of Jim Garrison.
And Oliver Stone wasn't even interested. But, you know what? We developed our own humor in New Orleans. You know what? At one time, Earl Warren made a public statement. You know, he said, if Mort Sahl has any new evidence, he should show it to me. And because I'm the head of the Warren Commission, Garrison said, well, Mort's kind of fond of the old evidence because it still has a virginal quality about it. We had a lot of fun in a dark way. We had a lot of fun in a dark way. The movie, of course, you know, with Kevin Costner and all, mm-hmm. is politically correct. You know, it's got a woman on Garrison's staff, and it, we never had one. But I had worked for Kennedy as a writer. You know, as a speechwriter. In fact, I was the only one, except Sorensen wrote the serious stuff. And he was always suspicious of me because he thought I idealized Adlai Stevenson, and I did. And then when he died, all his friends disappeared, which is just like a bad movie. And then I was on the radio, and I decided to get an interview with Garrison. I was just on the radio just like you, Robin.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I wanted to talk to him. And I went down to New Orleans, and I got out of the plane, and I go out to get a taxi, and we're driving along, and I say to the taxi driver, 4600 Owens Boulevard. He says, well, that's Jim Garrison's house. I'm not going near there. I might get shot. So I said, it's dangerous, is it? He said, yeah, that guy, he's taking on the whole government. And I said, well, what's your opinion? Do you think they did it? He said, well, those guys are capable of anything. We went by a theater, and Mark Lane's movie about the silenced witnesses, Rush to Judgment, was showing there. I said, what is that movie? And the cab driver said, it's called Russian Judgment. And then I got to Garrison's house. I knocked on the door, and he came to the door. He's 6'7", in a bathrobe. I said, I came down to shake your hand. He said, I hope you're going to do more than that. And then we were off for the next 10 years, you know. I used to help him with the press conferences on the steps of the courthouse. But he was a magnificent guy. You know, when he lost the case against Shaw, he said, they said, you lost the case. He said, well, Clarence Darrow lost the Monkey Scopes trial, too.
Right.
So he was really a guy, the bravest American I ever met.
Well, you know, one of the things that you speak of Oliver Stone, one of the things Oliver Stone said in interviews about JFK was that the Warren Commission had produced a myth, and that his film JFK was not necessarily even a search for the exact truth, but it was his desire to create a counter myth to the Warren Commission. Is he, in fact, you know, another kind of palatable to the public alternate history that would combat that? Is the Warren Commission just a myth? I mean, it looks like it to me.
It's a tissue of lies. And what it actually is a diversion. In other words, if you're really interested in the case, that's the last thing I would read. It takes you by the nose and leads you the other way. That's what it was for. It's a cover-up. And, in fact, I said to Bill Moyers in the Johnson White House, he said, I read the Warren Commission, and I said, I didn't know you were fond of fiction. I said that to him in the White House mess. He's an okay guy. He's a good guy. So is Nader. There's some really good guys around. Nader is good because of his parents. You can tell.
Right.
You read his new book, you can tell.
Yes. Absolutely. That's what he goes into that.
Sound like a Freudian.
No. What's interesting, but you know, what's interesting is with what you've been through and the things that you've seen, you don't seem bitter. If I can be so
not
bold.
At all.
Yeah.
Not at all. I haven't earned that right. I'm kind of shocked. I'm shocked that they murdered Kennedy and got away with it. But now I've accepted that, and we move on, and we move on to the new scrutiny. The other night I did a show, and a lady said during a question period, "Isn't Bush the dumbest guy you've ever met?" I said, "What evidence is there that he's dumb?" that's not the lesson from all this. I mean, you know, you have to find other ways to puncture the mythology. There are several ways, you know, to use wit to go after it. I mean, sometimes the question period, by the way, was Woody Allen's idea. It's not the strongest part of the show.
Do you find that we are living in especially Machiavellian times, or all times, based on your kind of historical observation, Machiavellian?
It was certainly Machiavellian, and I suppose Cheney is, although the fact that you can see it with the naked eye means they're not too good at it. There used to be an old joke about Kissinger, you know, you're drowning 20 feet from shore, and he throws you a 15-foot rope and says, I've met you more than halfway. And, you know, I've made some amazing friends along the way. General Haig is a great friend of mine.
And you supported him in his presidential run.
Yes, I did. And he just endorsed McCain and the straight talk express. But
what I like about that, it no longer needs a punchline.
You know, I mean, this whole thing with, you know, the Democrats. Well, I've worked both sides of the street, you know. I know them. I know a lot of them well, and the Democrats kind of put me in Coventry for a while. I don't think that Clinton bunch was real Democrats anyway.
Well, I mean, many people say he was the finest Republican president of the post-war era.
Yeah, the Democrats became the left wing of the Republican Party. And I don't know how they're ever going to get out of it. I mean, they've got one honest guy running now. Edwards is an honest guy. I don't know about the rest. I don't know Obama and... I know a lot about Chicago politics, but I got that I want to live in Chicago so that I can participate politically after I die. That's about it. And, you know, I remember a big joke there. Speaking of, as we did it originally about Imus, a big joke there was trying to find full-time employment for black kids without any college degrees. And the head of the Board of Trade said, well, how many basketball teams can we organize? And nobody did anything to him because he was rich. You know, I mean...
I don't know if you get away with that today.
Well, no, you can't. But, you know, there's still the age-old suspicions. You remember when Muhammad Ali said that Jewish promoters were making money off the black athlete's prowess?
Sure.
It's all stuff they learn at somebody's knee. You know, and I mean, what if you got up on the stage and said today that I was walking through the San Fernando Valley and I saw two Iranians and they refer to Beverly Hills as the old country. Come on. I mean, you know, it's a real estate joke, isn't it? I don't know about all this. You know, I mean, I wonder why Chris Rock and those guys haven't weighed in on this.
I do wonder, and one thing that I wonder about is, and I don't mean disrespectfully, whether they're smart enough, whether they have enough experience. These folks, they wound up, Chris Rock wound up on TV at the age of, what, 18, 17,
yeah,
8 years old?
Yeah.
You know, they come through the clubs, right, doing their 5 and 10 minute sets at the open mics and then the showcases and what have you, and so it's got to be punchline, 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 which
means...
It's a different
good observation.
I can tell you
a black guy that knows what the game is. General Powell knows what the game is. He really knows. You know, and you notice he made himself available to the Republicans.
Yes.
Because the line on the other side didn't appeal to him. The long line on the other side. But, you know, I noticed Cosby didn't weigh in on Imus. Hasn't said a word.
I don't think he has. No, he's obviously got his own skeletons in the closet there.
Why?
So.
Why don't they take care of the whole Don Imus thing and put him on satellite radio? I mean, if instead of having him lose his job, why don't they somebody pick him up on satellite? He can say whatever he wants, and people can
perhaps,
pay for it. And
it could perhaps happen. I think satellite radio is just in such disarray at this point.
Yeah.
I don't think they're ready to sign any big contracts.
But the line about what you can and can't say, that seems to shift. And it shifts for reasons that aren't clear, so that folks who are performers, and I, as I mentioned, I've been listening to Imus since I was a little kid. I would wake up in the morning and listen to him, right? It was right. Imus in the morning, and he would, how's your Donkey Kong, baby, and all that stuff when I was a kid in New York. So, been listening to him forever and forever. Those lines change. I don't know whether the DJs get memos about that, or all of a sudden they just get, you know, caught up short at the end
of
the day.
You know, Don Imus is married because of me.
Is that right?
And it happened because he met a girl much younger than himself, and he had his doubts about participating. And I told him to go for it. And I told him because Garrison had said to me at the height of the investigation, he said, do you think what we're doing is important? And I said, yes. And he said, well, it isn't. It doesn't mean anything if there isn't any love in our lives. And he was recommending that I marry a girl I was going out with.
Wow.
Which I did. Which shows you that Hollywood movies shaped us a lot more than the politicians did.
Yeah.
That's really Jimmy Stewart and Donna Reed.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Wow. That what goes around comes around.
All the time.
In a big way.
You know, I think that's true. I think it really does. What we're doing. But you're right about the line. The line shifting, and it'll get closer until you won't be able to say anything, and you'll forget what you believed in because you're afraid of getting your throat cut.
With Michael Richards a few months ago saying what he said, it sounds like he dropped off the face of the earth. And now with Don Imus, it is going to be very everybody's going to be walking on eggshells to not that it's necessary to make fun of anybody of any kind of background, but I'm saying like everybody's going to be. Keeping their mouths shut.
You know what's interesting? The Imus story has taken the real news of the day off the front page. We're not
here. That's what they hope for.
And it's worked.
And it's working. Yeah, it's working again. It's almost like clockwork now. Every 3 months, there's some celebrity scandal that takes the real news, the war, and the thousands of dead Americans off the front page.
Sure.
Anna Nicole Smith.
Yeah, they're distractions.
They don't need her anymore, though.
And diversions. So.
You know, it's kind of interesting. I'm sure the guy who won the paternity is very disappointed that the Imus story has come along now because there goes his 15 minutes. He doesn't. That story's no longer necessary. We've got Imus.
Do you have the opportunity to speak to students in your sort of day to day life these days, Morton?
As a matter of fact, they offered me a teaching position at Claremont Colleges in the fall.
Really?
Yeah, I had made up a course called the Revolutionary's Handbook. how to maintain your identity in a corporate society, and they made a bid for it, and I'm sure they're good if they're given the opportunity and not corporatized, to coin a verb.
Well, but I think, as you said earlier, you know, Hollywood has a bigger impact on people than we realize along the way. I think our teachers have a bigger impact. I remember things that I heard when I was in college, little bits of Marxian economics theory, which sort of stick in the back of my head. And often,
where did you go to school?
I happened to go to MIT.
Wow.
And, well, that's okay. I almost didn't get out twice, so I wouldn't be that impressed. But I took some classes from Ben Harrison, who was a Marxist economics theorist. And those things are always in the back of my head, questioning my capitalist assumptions as I go through my life. Those are good things to have in there, those little itches that make me uncomfortable. I'm glad that those are there. Maybe those are the kinds of things that students need to be hearing now.
Not according to David Horowitz.
So. Well, yeah, he's something, isn't he?
Yeah. The Consumer Reporter?
Well, all those left-wing professors he keeps meeting.
Yeah, you might be one of them this fall. So, along with his report on the malfunctioning toaster, you might get notice.
And I saw him on C-SPAN not long ago, didn't I?
It's very possible. I mean, he's very active in this anti-professorial, super right-wing kind of smear campaign.
Well, if the professors are gaining power, you'd never know it, because the professors in Berkeley were putting a stop to the Vietnamese War. I don't see anybody stopping this one.
Well, you know, it's funny. You hear professors who will talk, say, about, for instance, Marx. And one of the things that I almost always hear when I go to lectures, things like that, or, well, you know, I'm a philosophy professor, blah, 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 and I'm here to talk about Marx. Now, by all means, I'm not endorsing Marxism, communism, or socialism of any kind. They feel it necessary to come out with this disclaimer, even if they're going to talk about some fairly academic aspect of Marx and praise it. They feel this kind of knee-jerk need to actually say, I'm disassociating myself with everything.
Yeah, the great American disclaimer, my opinions are not necessarily my own. Yeah, well,
that's embarrassing to me.
That's a great observation.
So I guess the question that I have is, well, how, and I mean this only partly tongue-in-cheek, how did you become so smart? What was your background that got you to think?
I'm kind of a fraud, you know. I wasn't a very good student. And
I like you more already.
I probably was hoping my father would approve.
But did you carry on these conversations around your own dinner table? Were you always questioning way?
They were pretty good disbelievers, my mother and father, in the system. And then I took it from there, figuring there might be somebody out there that feels the way I do, instead of the usual show business approach, which is I'll pretend to say something they might like. Well, of course, there's no bottom to that. That so-called commercial humor. I don't find that the movies even reflect this now. The foreign ones do. Did you see After the Wedding? How about Avenue Montaigne? Lives of Others? They're still human. They're still human in Europe. It's not. We're not human. It just isn't encouraged. It's not encouraged there.
But I look for performers or artists or writers or musicians who have caught that thread in this country, in this culture now, to find hopefulness and try to understand what it is that drives them forward. Obviously, there was something that brought you to the stage when, you know, it wasn't like you were going up on stage at a time when there were 10 or 20 other guys doing exactly what you were doing.
No.
And you said, I'm going to do what they're doing. I'm just going to do it with a different accent. There was something else. You had some other spark that said, you know, F this. I see something that I want to do.
There was more optimism in America then. You could feel it. You could go into Washington, you feel it when Kennedy was elected. And he was pretty moderate at the time.
Yeah.
You know,
so the national leaders matter more than people realize.
Yes, and not in a tangible way. So did Jackie. So did Marilyn Monroe. I mean, as figures of inspiration.
Right.
So did Frank Sinatra. That's what's remarkable about that. I mean, turn on XM on Channel 73 and hear those records.
Sure.
all the Johnny Mercer music and Yip Harburg, and
right.
It's much more optimistic. I don't know if it was justified, but they sure dream good dreams.
What do you think happened, you know, through the 70s, after Watergate, with the economic upheavals and the disappointment of the Carter administration, the disaster of Watergate?
I think fascism.
Yeah, it feels to me like America seemed to have two choices, which is proceed with incredible incredulity, or, you know, of power and government, or make a headlong rush for credulity, which seems to have been less painful.
Well, the country used to lead by example. It didn't lead at the point of a gun.
Yeah, I just wonder why we have fallen into this extraordinary credulity.
Well, we're comfortable with fascism.
Yeah, we seem to
be.
You
wonder if that's a part of the human nature.
Yeah, it's the part you want to watch out for. Sure, of course it is.
And that's when you need artists and performers to speak the kind of truth to power to kind of tap you in the head with their finger and go, you know, hello, wake up for a moment.
Well, we always had them. You know, I remember all the music during the 60s, and I remember the comedians that opened for them. They were never very political. That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah,
they weren't
kind of reversal.
Very political. Maybe they never thought it was going in the right direction. The singers did a lot of protesting. But which they don't do now.
No, you mentioned XM. You listen to the XM Folk Channel. I think it's 14 or 15, and there's very little that's sort of current music. Maybe they just had better drugs back then.
Well, you know, Ken Kesey was the first guy that told me that the government was distributing the drugs to distract young people from doing the right thing.
It's interesting, though, you're speaking of the, you know, artists always being available, hopefully, to poke power in the side. And I'm thinking about, you know, those artists, you know, your Jefferson Airplanes, things like that, even the Beatles and the Stones, to whatever extent, in the 60s. By the end of the 70s, you've got the Fleetwood Macs and the Eagles, and they are very apolitical. They are not putting out an overtly political message. They don't seem to have overtly political goals.
That's true.
And I wonder if that wasn't sort of the beginning of an abdication on the part of artists of that responsibility to poke and irritate power.
Yeah, the emperor has no clothes. I don't know. The comedians are fond of mythologizing Lenny Bruce. You know, he was crucified because he poked. The idea is to sell you the myth that it's dangerous to think for yourself when, in fact, it's the only hope.
Right. Well, that sounds like a T-shirt, Mort.
Well, it's true. I mean, I don't think any wars occurred because there was too much individuality.
My friend Herb Sargent, did you ever hear of him?
Oh, sure.
Herb used to wear a T-shirt, and the front of it said, "This space reserved for something socially significant." He was really smart and very idealistic. He didn't come off that way because of the jokes, but he really was. And he was the head writer at Saturday Night at the beginning.
That's right.
He was also Steve Allen's head writer. But the optimism of Frank Sinatra. Listen to the guys imitating him. Listen to Rod Stewart and Michael Bolton and Michael Bublé and all those.
Do I have to?
It never gets there. It never gets there. I mean, it's a dreaming here, you know, raised exponentially. And, you know, getting back to our original thing with Imus, you know, I worked a lot of jazz guys, as you know.
Sure.
When I worked with Miles hated white people. But who would ever think about taking away his right to play?
It is amazing. One thing that strikes me about Imus, too, is that, and the remarks that Robin was making about Chris Rock, Imus is a well-educated guy. You know, he didn't come out of that sort of, I'm out of high school and I'm doing the clubs, and I never got a sort of critical education. I think has a master's degree, doesn't he?
Does he? I don't know.
I thought so.
Well, we're just going to say he does.
Okay, thank you. That's confirmation enough for me.
As long as it makes your point.
It helps. If only all evidence was so malleable, so plastic, I'd be a genius.
Kinky Friedman's great friend.
That's right.
Absolutely.
That, in fact, I learned about Kinky's music from Imus and then went and explored all of Kinky's catalog of music and his writing. And I guess, first of all, I asked for 15 minutes and you've given us more than an hour today. So I feel like we've already overstayed our welcome.
Well, I've enjoyed
home.
Talking to you.
Well, believe me, it's more than mutual. I don't want to take more of your
time. Never going to find this at Starbucks.
No.
I keep hoping, but it doesn't happen.
No. I mean, I wonder, like, where is the Mort Saul program on XM satellite radio? How come some damn program...
Well, I tried, but they were pretty resistant. First, they told me they only use Oprah's talk shows.
Well, then I called Mel Carmes. You're as close to a black woman as I've ever met.
And I said to him, if you don't know my work, ask Imus. And he said, I'm willing to give you a job even though you're a friend of Imus. Which is pretty funny, although he never did give me the job. I thought, there ought to be a show like this on all the time.
Absolutely.
Talking to people all night.
Absolutely.
And really still care about the Republic.
And there are thousands and thousands, and those people have impact on other people. So all you need to do is to kind of get in there, and it doesn't have to be dry and stuffy. We have fun here every single week. We laugh.
I can tell.
We laugh almost constantly for every single week. And yet there's little ideas we throw in there, little subversive things, and people around the world write us and go, I never thought about it that
way.
Well,
it's important that people find out they're not alone.
Exactly. So you're coming up on your 80th birthday. I hope that wasn't a secret. Son of a bitch, Mort. God, that's so cool. And your website is www.mortsaul.com, just so that we give a plug out here, because there's going to be some kind of celebration coming up, I understand.
They're working on it, you know, surviving in spite of the odds. You know,
are you talking about you?
Yeah, well, listen, you know, the country, I don't know, I just don't believe any of those guys out there. I don't believe any of them. It starts with deep belief. Kennedy said to me once, we started this thing because my father could afford it. And once I met Nixon, it became like the Holy Grail. Although Nixon is one of the brightest guys I ever met. Really bright. He had a great plus, too. He had no self-pity.
Which,
he never suck his thumb, no matter what the punch was, he'd take it.
Yeah.
Well, that genius, unfortunately, just made him more dangerous.
It's very right zen, though. In order to have good, you have to have evil.
It's true.
It's the core of every Tarantino movie.
How's the new one doing?
Well, you know, they actually, Harvey, they've pulled, I guess they're going to pull it from the theaters because it did so poorly, the double feature. They're going to re-release it as two independent features.
Release them separately?
Release them separately. I guess that was a plan in Europe, was to release them separately. And I guess it seemed too daunting for people to go to a double feature. Our attention span is so short. That's at least what they've said. Who the hell knows?
I think they just didn't want to see the Robert Rodriguez film.
It was great, you know, when you're in your teens.
Yeah.
But if people hang on to it as a fantasy, it means they're avoiding growing up. He was a really smart guy. And they broke his heart. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
You know, Spielberg bought the sled, you remember?
Oh, yeah, sure.
But he never gave Wells a movie to direct.
No, we were, Sean and I were watching a documentary about Wells that they made on the BBC, where he got, I think, a lot more proper respect than he did even in the film industry of this country.
Absolutely.
And
he was not, you know, he's not a compromiser. He was a communist.
Yeah.
And he was willing to go to bat for it. Did both of you see Munich?
Yes, sure.
I love it. Spielberg has the ambivalent Israelis in it. Every time they shoot somebody, they say, gosh, I wonder if we're any better than they are. We're resorting to their methods. Have you ever met anybody from Israel who had any doubt? Now, there's a great apocryphal joke, and I might add it isn't mine, that describes the Israeli character. The UN is doing a survey on the protein shortage for children around the world. So they stop the General Assembly when it adjourns, and they pick four representatives at random to make a survey. The guy comes up with a clipboard. He stops an American, a Russian, an Ethiopian, and an Israeli at random. excuse me, but what's your opinion of the world meat shortage? And the American says, what's a shortage? And the Russian says, what's an opinion? The Ethiopian says, what's meat? And the Israeli says, what's, excuse me? So it really catches it, doesn't it? Only humor can do it. But, you know, that was the strength of America. It wasn't too much of any one group.
Mort Saul is www.mortsaul.com. He May 11th, scant month from today, as a matter of fact. Mort turns 80 years old, and there's a good possibility there's going to be a big birthday celebration for him down in Los Angeles. And if that's happening, I will be there. I'll make sure that I make my way to introduce myself to you, Mort.
I hope you do.
Oh, I'd love to.
I hope you guys ask me back.
Oh, God, we'd love to have you. Oh, I mean, it seems like an imposition. We would love to have you back.
I was just going to say, and I never do this. I haven't done it with any other guest we've had on the program, but I just want to thank you personally, not only for being on the program, but for just being a part of my life for all those years and bringing me so much pleasure and thought.
That's very generous of you.
Absolutely.
And, you know, don't throw the number away.
Mort Saul, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so very much. Have a great show tomorrow night.
And, thanks, partner. I can always use those thoughts.
We appreciate that. And our good friends, Ross Schaefer and Jan Karam, who helped put us in contact with you. So we really appreciate both their help.
They're the best of people.
They're great people. And Ken Turetsky and Charles Lacoudere, there were a couple of friends of mine, smart people. And I said, what would you ask Mort if you had this opportunity? And so they helped us do a little show prep today. So I want to throw some shouts out to both of them as well.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much, Mort.
See you later.
All right,
thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I'm. Can I use the obscenity?
Fuck.
Yeah. Fuck. Fuck. That was just a wonderful, wonderful time. I was writing down during the thing. You know, usually during interviews, we write down questions sometimes that come up out of a conversation that we might ask later in the interview. I just wrote down ideas for me to think about. I mean, I don't really feel like in the next segment it would even be worthwhile to talk about this interview, because I need to sit and think about a couple of ideas before, you know, before we come back. That was wonderful.
This reminds me of the best parts of college.
Yeah.
Right? Of a kind of broad education where you have an accessible professor who has experience, who has humor, who has some insight, who's got a lot of questions, right? A lot of answers and a lot of questions. And you can carry on that kind of dialogue, and the more you talk, the more you want to talk. You know, this is kind of like intellectual crack.
It is.
Talking to Mort, I mean, really, that's what it felt like. It was like, I got more, and I looked at the time, and I thought, oh, shit, we've been on for an hour and 27 minutes here. You know, it's like, how the fuck did that happen? Well, we could go longer. I don't think we're boring him. You know, I mean,
I sure hope not, because we are going to use that number again, ladies and gentlemen. You will hear. You keep listening to Schnauzer Logic,
you will hear
Mort again.
So thank you, Mort.
Thanks.
Thank you, Jan.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ross. Thanks, everyone who helped put the interview on the plate for us today.
Oh, just wonderful.
Yeah.
Can we hear a dirty song soon?
Can we hear a dirty song?
A dirty rap song that...
To kind of like a
palate.
A little bit of something to clean your palate.
Right. Bring us down from the high-minded spot where I feel I might be right now.
Well, I think we need to talk to Jason.
And so, as
preparation for that, we'll play the Ben Folds version of that song, kind of bring us into that. All right,
I need a cracker between the
a little pen. What do they call that? That, I mean,
I don't know. The,
you know, when you have the little palate cleanser, it's a, what is it? You know,
there is a name.
It's a dental appointment.
Thank God something remains constant in my life, baby.
No humor?
Baby.
I was ready to laugh.
All right. Now, did you know much of Mort's material before?
No, I didn't.
So little, I mean, you're younger than we are.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
you know the influence. You, just listening to him talk, if you'd never heard him before, you can hear those influences.
Absolutely.
Right in the Jon Stewarts and the Bill Maher's and what have
George
you.
George Carlin, even.
Oh, definitely. I mean, Carlin. Yeah. Carlin
was kind of my generation. I mean, although he's much, I mean, not really, but when he had his heart attack in mid-80s, I caught on to George Carlin. And until Mort Saul, I truly thought George Carlin was the innovator of all
well,
the...
Well, and Carlin will give credit to Saul, and yeah. Hicks gave credit to Saul. I mean, what's interesting, if you Google Mort Saul, what you usually see is a listing of folks that people point to as being who inspired them to do the kind of political commentary and comedy that we really enjoy so much.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it's
but
like,
he doesn't seem angry.
No.
No, you know what you said, that he hadn't become cynical.
No.
He hadn't become dark.
No.
Even though you can tell he knows he walks in the shadow of the Valley of Death.
Allie Waller has a worse opinion. She has a bad attitude.
No.
I mean, I say that jokingly.
No,
but
I know.
Mean, a lot of the younger comic writers
sure.
that we've talked to seem to have, they're more jaded
yeah.
with less experience under their belts than Mort, who's kind of, I don't know if he's seen it all, but he's seen a lot of it.
No kidding. You know, the CIA or God knows what nefarious force capped his friend, the president. That's got to do something.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, what else can you say? Yeah. All right. Take a break. A little tunage back on the other side. Schnauzer Logic, Robin Goldstein, Sean Meehan, and Parviz Vitali. We'll talk Imus, okay?
Yeah.
It's important that you stay happy, too.
Oh, no, I'm very happy.
Because you represent a segment of the audience.
Believe it or not, to see you two happy in this interview, that's good. That's all good for me. I like that. I like to see that this, you know, this turns you on. That's nice.
It does.
Yeah, it's nice.
It does.
Like you said, it's a mental crack. It's exciting.
It's a mental crack.
Yeah.
I like the way you right. said it was better. All right, stick around.
I think you're a refreshing gay boy.
Schnauzer Logic.
Bitches ain't shit. Bitches ain't shit.
Bitches ain't shit but hoes and tricks. Lick on these nuts and suck the dick. Let's get the fuck out after you're done. And I hops in my ride to make a quick run. I used to know a bitch named Eric Wright. We used to roll around and fuck the hoes at night. Tighter than a motherfucking gangster beats. And we was ballin' on the motherfucking Compton streets. Peep, that shit got deep and it was on. Number one song after number one song. Long as my motherfucking pockets was fat, I didn't give a fuck where the bitch was at. But she was hanging with the white bitch, doing the shit she do, sucking on a stick just to get a buck or two. In the end, she got meant nothing. And now she's suing cause the shit she be doing ain't shit.
Just can't hang with the streets.
She found herself short.
She's taking me to court.
It's real conversation for your ass.
Had a bitch named Mandy Mayer. Used to be up in them guts like every day. The pussy was the bomb. Had a nigga on sprung. I was in love like a motherfucker licking the proton. The homies used to tell me that she wasn't no good. But I'm the maniac in black, Mr. Snoopy's wood. So I figured niggas wouldn't trip with mine. Guess what got gaffled by one time.
I'm back in the motherfucking county jail. 6 months on my chest, now it's time to bail. I gets released on a hot sunny day. My nigga DOC and my homie Dr. Dre. Scooped in a coupe, Snoop, we got the news. Your girl was tricking while you was drinking the county blues. Ain't been out a second, already I got to do some motherfucking chin checking.
Move up the block as we groove down the block. See my girl's house, Dre, past the clock. Kicking the dough and I look on the floor. It's my little cousin Daz and he's fucking my hoe. I uncocked my shit. I'm heartbroken, but I'm still looked.
Man, fuck that bitch.
3, 4.
Bitches ain't shit but hoes and tricks. Lick on these nuts and suck a dick. Get the fuck out. And I hops in my ride to make a quick run. I used to know a bitch named Eric Wright. We used to roll around and fuck the hoes at night. Tighter than a motherfucking gangster beat. And we was falling on the motherfucking Compton Street.
that shit got deep and it was on. Number one song after number one song. Long as my motherfucking pockets was fat, I didn't give a fuck where the bitch was at. But she was hanging with the white bitch, doing the shit she do, sucking on his dick just to get a buck or two. In the end, so she got meant nothing. And now she's suing cause the shit she be doing ain't shit. She found herself short. That's some real conversation for your ass. Just can't hang with the streets. 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 Just can't hang with the streets.
Welcome back. We're 32 minutes into the second hour of Schnauzerlogic. Robin Goldstein, host buddy and pal, www.schnauzerlogic.com. Robin at schnauzerlogic.com, and the area code is 206-666-6540. Sean Meehan, welcome back.
Ah, it's great to be here.
And Parviz Vitali.
I think of Mel Brooks and Blazing Saddles. Sitting around the campfire farting.
Oh. Ever?
Yeah, the Mexicans.
Were they farting?
Well, they ate the chili.
Well, there is the whole farting scene around the campfire, but I don't remember the Mexicans. Was it?
No, I don't remember Mexicans farting.
I just threw that in.
Where's our little kosher brother from the Southland?
Well, he may be right here.
I bought a bourgeois house in the Hollywood Hills with a trunk load of $100,000 bills. Man came by to hook up my cable TV. We settled in for the night, my baby and me. We switched round and round till half past dawn. There was 57 channels in
the all Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van.
57 channels in
the all Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van.
57 channels in
the bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van.
57 channels
in. Yes, the bald Jewish guy in the 1988 VW van. Our good friend Jason Nathanson, welcome to Schnauzerlogic. Son of Easton, my friend.
Hello, my little jigaboos.
How's your Donkey Kong, baby? So, you know, it occurred to me, welcome. Obviously, we want to talk about Imus. It's sort of like the pop culture story of the week here in the United States.
Did Imus say something?
Yeah. Well, actually, it was Parviz.
I can believe that.
But thank you, Jay. But it occurred to me that I mean, obviously, although this is a story, I wonder whether people have heard what it was. So I actually have the audio. So we want to play the raw audio. It's about 55 seconds, all right?
Wait, can you patch it in so I can hear? Because I haven't heard anything yet.
You really haven't heard him say this?
No, I haven't heard anything on the show yet the audio.
You haven't?
On your show. I can't hear audio so far.
Okay. Well, let me know whether
Well, 55 seconds are up.
What'd you think of that?
That was outrageous.
All right, hold on.
So I watched the basketball game last night between a little bit of Rutgers and Tennessee, the women's final.
Yeah, Tennessee won last night, seventh championship for Pat Summitt. Man, they beat Rutgers by 13 points.
That's some rough girls from Rutgers, man. They got tattoos and
some hardcore hoes.
That's some nappy-headed hoes there, I'm going to tell you that now. Oh, man, that's some... Ooh. And the girls from Tennessee, they all look cute, you know, so... Like, kind of like a, I don't know.
Spike Lee thing.
Yeah.
The Jingaboos versus the Wannabes.
Yeah,
that movie that he had.
Yeah, it was a tough.
Do the right thing.
I don't know if I'd have wanted to beat Rutgers or not, but they did, right?
That is a tough watch. More looking Rutgers, they look exactly like the Toronto Raptors.
Well, I guess
only tougher.
Are we able to hear that?
Yes, I was, thankfully.
Did you notice when he said nappy-headed hose, there's this weird pause as if he knew, I just fucked up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the whole thing is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So, I was almost hoping when you played it just now, he wasn't going to say it.
but the co-host led him into it by saying, those are some...
hose.
Those are some hose, and he compounded by nappy-headed hose. So nothing's ever heard about that guy, but...
He was tossed so quickly. He was tossed like within minutes of the thing. The producer got tossed.
So for folks outside the United States who may not be, because we know we have lots of listeners around the world, Don Imus is a morning host, if you will. He was previously known as a shock jock, one of the first shock jocks in this country. We were talking to Mort Saul. I mentioned I used to listen to Imus in the morning on WNBC.
Imus in the morning!
That's right. Quack, quack. 5 minutes past an hour. Quack, quack. Right. All of that crap. Yeah. He had the duck, and, he would do the Reverend Dr. Billy Saul Hargis and God's Other Son and all that. He was a shock jock, and Howard came to New York the day afternoons. That's where that whole famous feud started. But before there was Howard in New York, there was Imus in the morning in New York. Big cokehead, big alcoholic, funny guy that I would listen to in the mornings. And my show was called Goldstein in the Morning when I was in high school, and I did the high school radio show after Imus. So he's been around forever and forever. His show.
So you're a racist too.
I guess. I don't know. I have other issues. Do I need to add that to the straight white Buddhist vegetarian racist lesbian?
When you pattern your whole career off of the Grand Wizard, I think.
So anyhow, so he's been in radio for 30 years, I think, doing morning shows. He's reinvented himself many times along the way, and most recently he's reinvented himself as kind of a more of a political commentary. He does social commentary in the morning. He doesn't do the shticks anymore. He doesn't really have the song parodies anymore. He's not a shock jock. He's not an FM morning show.
He's a little more of a Phil Murray kind, or Bill Murray kind of
guy. Yeah, more like a Phil Murray kind of guy, I think. Yeah.
He's a calamari.
He's a calamari kind of guy. And he has on lots of famous politicians. Giuliani's been on the show, and John McCain's been on the show, and John Kerry's been on the show, and he has lots of well-known politicians who do the show. So it's become a stopping ground. Tim Russert, a lot of NBC News folks will stop by and talk to him and tell him things, kind of like the conversation we were having with Mort. You know, back room, but it's actually on the air. And so he's got access to folks, and I don't think he was not trying to be outrageous along the way. And Jason, I didn't mean to take away. I mean, I'm talking plenty of the show. You and Parviz obviously have been following this closely.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And the biggest news that came today is that MSNBC has now fired him, and he won't be doing the show on there anymore. And that's it's only a matter of time before he's probably fired from the CBS show. The president of CBS, they have a new president now, and he's been oddly silent on the whole thing. So they're just probably waiting to see, you know, how many more advertisers drop. And it's kind of weird because, I mean, yes, it was an offensive comment, and I'm not one who can say, I'm not a nappy-headed hoe, so I can't say if it offended me or didn't. It didn't offend me.
Well, you're not nappy-headed.
I have no hair at all, so I was offended just by that, by people who have hair. But NBC News President Steve Kappas was on Hardball tonight.
Yeah.
And he said...
He looked very uncomfortable, by the way. I was watching that as I was preparing for the show today, and he was being interviewed by the fellow who's sitting in for Tweety Bird, for Chris Matthews, David Gregory from the White House correspondent.
Right, and he said tonight that he's gotten a lot of emails from a lot of people at NBC, and most of them have worked at NBC for decades, people who put their lives on the line covering wars and things like that. These comments were deeply hurtful to many, many people. And, I just have to have a feeling that people who are covering wars aren't really all that offended by these comments. It seems to me it's a little overblown. But, I mean, the media picked it up and ran with it. I mean, the thing took over almost a week to generate the kind of upset that it did. And, you know, with the conference yesterday by the basketball players who all came out and looked like somebody raped their puppies while making them watch. I mean, it was just, it's weird. weird.
One of the young women last night, and she stood before, she clearly was uncomfortable in standing before a microphone, and she said, this was very hurtful. It has scarred me for life. She literally said that this, you know, this had scarred her for life. And I thought, well, first of all, you don't know that yet. You know, it's way too early to tell. And second of all, really?
Yeah, you must have led a very sheltered life.
Really?
That
this
scar you for
some,
life.
You know, because I mean, obviously we're in positions of power and authority and, you know, we have better financial situations than students do. And so it's easy for me to say, he's a stupid white asshole and fuck him, you know, with any luck, he'll be dead soon. And, you know, on to the next thing. His lung collapsed a few years ago. You know, it's just a matter of time. I can wait him out. You know, that's what, you know, if you would have figured somebody on this team would have said, listen, we'll just wait him out. You know, I'll be playing basketball long after people forget who the fuck Imus in the morning was. Next question, please. You know, that person could run for office. But I'm curious about you. Well, you and I haven't talked about this very much because you and I have talked about things which I have found offensive in the past that you haven't, and your response has been, funny is funny.
Right.
And
right.
So how do you see this?
Well, I didn't think it was funny, first of all.
Oh,
I mean,
well,
okay. No, not like offensive. I was offended. I was just like, all right, nappy headed hose. All right. It just kind of.
Just no joke there.
There was no joke. It wasn't even. It just wasn't funny. So I the only point I wanted to make, and I made it with Mort, was okay, put him on satellite if he needs to get his kind of aggressions out. I did see him talk to Reverend Sharpton.
Yeah.
And he, I think a black collar called up. And then Imus says, you people. You know, so he does seem to have a kind of a weird, in the back of his mind, kind of grudge towards black people. Or he has to be offensive or
well, you know,
demeaning.
Sharpton tried to call him on that. It's interesting you picked up on that because Sharpton said to him, you know, immediately he was so fine-tuned. He goes,
what do you mean?
He said, I mean you and the caller, the two of you here, you know. I think that was true. I don't think he meant you people as in you black people. I think
but
he
that
meant,
could be construed that way. Also,
well, here's the thing. If you go through life and people are racist towards you on a daily basis, you're going to pick up on things that may or may not be racist, and you're going to be ultra hypersensitive to things like that. And you know, you might pick up on things that are subtly racist that the people don't even realize are racist. So you know,
so you're kind of like a racism sniffing dog.
Yeah, you have a higher sense of perception for that.
They had those in Alabama, as a matter of fact, back in the 60s.
Hey, also really quickly, and Jason, you might remember this, but during the American Idol,
don't you have to go?
Yeah, I do have to go. Oh, I do. I do. But listen. I just want to get this out real quick, and then I'll give all the time to Jason. There was a
I'll
time.
I'll take my answer on the air.
All right, listen. What was I going to say?
First time, long time.
Okay. American.
Love you, love the show.
Love it. Ditto. Okay, what was it? The American Idol. During the auditions, there was a person that auditioned, and he had big bulgy eyes, and he was paired up with another kid that was kind of retarded.
Yeah, he had Asperger's
Simon called him Bush Baby.
Yes.
So you do remember that?
Of course.
Yes. Wow. Isn't that just as bad as Nappy Headed Hoes?
No.
Okay.
No, Bush
I gotta
baby.
Go.
The kid did look like a Bush baby. I mean, cause after that,
good night, everybody.
Show for the next
I love you all. I love you, Jason. Love you, Robin. Love you, Sean. Bye.
We love you.
Yeah, the show's staying. Parvis is leaving. Sorry.
I need my go walking away music.
Oh, like the Hulk. Ding, ding, ding. I need Hulk walking away music.
Shredded shorts.
Hold on here.
I love you, my friend. Take care of yourself.
There's a fabulous hug going on.
All right. We'll see you next week. Yes? We got to talk next week about your one-year anniversary at the job.
Yes.
And then next week will be the third episode of the Parviz Vitali Show. Maybe you'll be there for it. Hold on a second here. Because right now, are you still there, dude?
Yeah.
Yeah. So right now, unfortunately, you had to leave, but now is the time for... It's the Parviz Vitali Show. Parviz's special guest host this week is Jason Nathanson. And now, your host, Jason Nathanson.
much better intro music than chipmunks and dancing hamsters.
So you're a guest hosting the Parviz Vitaly show this week.
Such an honor.
Do him proud, my friend. Do him proud.
Okay.
Usually there's a short monologue at this point.
Oh, I hate everybody of color.
All right, tonight's guest.
Now for a commercial from Procter & Gamble.
Do you get the impression, though, that at this point, this pile-on that is occurring now, with even Barack Obama coming on, saying absurdly that if any member of his staff were to say something like this, they'd be fired, which obviously, but of course... he's a political candidate in a presidential race. But do you think that this is just a way of individuals asserting their moral authority? Just like, I'm a good guy?
Possibly. I mean, but here's the thing. Imus is an asshole. Everybody knows it. Everybody who works in radio, everybody who's ever worked with him, there's countless stories about how this guy is a terrible, terrible prick. And if this happened to somebody who was really nice and really helpful and was really respected in the industry, people would come running to his defense, not just John McCain. So, I mean, there's kind of a karma thing here. What goes around comes around. And this guy, he might not deserve it for this comment, but for the way he's treated people in his life, he deserves something like this. So I can't help but think he brought it on himself.
Wow. Well, you know, you and I talked a little bit before the show today, so even having said that, you're not of the opinion that he should be forced off the air.
No, I wouldn't. If I were running CBS Radio, which I will someday, I would not be firing him right now. I know, doing a radio show is hard. You're on there for 3 hours, 4 hours, whatever a day.
Right.
And when you're doing a comedy show, or what's supposed to be a comedy show, you're going to say things that are going to offend people.
Hey, listen, during last week's show, you know, I got a comment, I won't repeat it, but I got a comment from someone who listened to last week's show, and they heard something that was said, and they said to me, that was not fair, that was not funny, and that was a little bit hurtful. And I went back and I said, you know, I think as it was sort of came out of somebody's mouth, not really important, but you know, as it came out of someone's
now I want to know what it is.
No, but I mean, as it came out of someone's mouth, I think I cringed just for a little moment, but I realized they were not trying to be hurtful, they were trying to be funny. And
was it me?
It's not important.
There was a show.
I thought, you know, we're moving at the speed of thought. That's the thing. We're moving, and we're throwing stuff out, and we try to, you know, and this show, because it's pre-recorded, I actually have a chance to do an edit on it. So we had the whole N-word thing a couple of months ago, where I thought, you know, I felt uncomfortable with that. I'm going to clean that up. But otherwise, you know, in the head, out the mouth, in the head, out the mouth. That's the way comedy works when it works best.
And this, when you listen to it, it's clearly that. I mean, it wasn't, they didn't sit down and write this bit.
Oh, God, no.
It wasn't something that they thought of. And, you know, in that way, it's a little different, I think, than even the Michael Richards thing, because the Michael Richards thing actually happened to black people. He was right in front of black people when he was yelling this. Imus was not in front of the Rutgers team, and if he were in front of the Rutgers team, I don't think he ever would have said something like this.
No.
And the context,
because they're mean girls, apparently.
Like Raptors.
Like Raptors, like the Toronto Raptors. I don't think he would have said a damn thing. It's just not even boo.
Here's what happened, okay? McGurk said hoes.
Yeah.
Right, because he said these are tough girls with tattoos, and so McGurk made the mental image hoes, and Imus immediately thought back to the Spike Lee film School Days, right, where the phrase is nappy headed hoes, and this was a sound match.
Right.
This was kind of a sound-alike match. I'm sure. I'm not defending Imus because
he
said some really incredibly offensive shit over the years about folks. But I know what happens in my own head.
It's a neuron switching.
Absolutely. And the word ho triggered nappy-headed ho. Not that he was thinking, well, these are nappy-headed looking hoes. It was just like that's the first match that came out.
Right.
If it had been hostess ho-hos, he would have said hostess ho-hos. But he's not a Jew from Brooklyn. I rest my case.
Well played. Well played.
So what do we do with this? I mean, what do we learn from this? You and Sam and John have done shows. You probably try to do more shows. We kind of keep doing shows. What do we take away from this?
We learn again that the world has changed since Janet Jackson, I guess, and people are going to have to use more of a mental filter, and unfortunately they're going to have to use more of a physical filter. A lot of stations who didn't use dumps and delays before before the Janet Jackson thing have started using them. And one of the saddest things that I just found out today, Vin Scully, who broadcasts, he does the Dodger games.
Forever!
He's been doing it for 50 years. I mean, the guy is great.
I think Mort Saul was listening to Vin Scully when he was a kid.
And he's a legend what he does, and everybody loves him. The station he's on, KFWB, they just put him on a delay. So you can no longer sit at the Dodger game and listen to him on the radio like most people do. I remember as a kid going there, and people would just sit there and listen to Vin Scully. They'd have transistors up,
That's
and it would be
wild.
Great. And everybody would listen.
I do it now.
Yeah, and you can't do that anymore because he's on a 10-second delay, and it's going to be kind of funny. It's not going to match up. So that's because of incidents like this, the world of radio is just going to get safer and more, I don't know, whitewashed, and it's not
going to
get good.
So going to a Dodgers game now is going to be like watching a Godzilla film.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Is that a joke about Ichiro? Are you making some kind of racial... Is that... Because I don't like that.
See, and that's also the thing. People are going to look for racist jokes where racist jokes aren't there. And we've become ultra-sensitive, and it's good to be sensitive, and it's good to stand up against racism.
But that Hulk music where we need it.
But when people can't sit around and joke and just, make offhanded comments and without fear of getting fired, it's just going to sanitize everything. Maybe this will be good for the world of satellite radio. Maybe Imus will go there and get hired because that's proving to be the place where you can go and be shocking and uncensored like Howard Stern is.
It feels to me like there are calls that want to stop him not from saying it. They want to stop him from thinking it. And that's what's so disturbing to me. I understand that you may be offended that he said it, and you may feel like, listen, someone needs to slap this guy's hand and go, dude, that's not the kind of shit we say in polite company. That's just not appropriate. And I've heard that said to me along my life, and I realize that I've made mistakes and things that I thought were acceptable or not acceptable, and I learned my lesson. I'm not, I'm a good person at my heart and move forward, and that's the end of the story. But it's almost as though people say, no, I don't even want you to think that way. And that's like, well, then you need to be there when I grow up. You need to, you need to do everything that it is that creates all of the things that I think in my head.
There's just a terrible thought police component to that. And one of the things that has come out of this that really annoys me is, we desperately need to have a dialogue on race. I hear that all the time. And, maybe this will help. This is sponsoring a dialogue on race. I have to laugh that this remark is sponsoring a meaningful dialogue on race. It's a ridiculous dialogue on race. It does, let's say Imus gets fired from everything and dies in poverty, and we get to watch it.
We won!
How are black people empowered? How is the black community brought some remedy for the many ills that afflict it right now? It's not. This is meaningless.
Well,
it's a distraction
they're
from
empowered,
those.
They're empowered in the same way that they're empowered when OJ gets off.
Right.
Right? They're empowered in the same way it's clear to me that I cannot comprehend at least the feelings of oppression that current black Americans, certainly a segment of current black American, I wouldn't even paint that brush very broadly, feel in their lives. Now, these are obviously not the children of slaves. They may be the children and the children of slaves, but yet that is so inculcated in the community. And again, I ask the same question that I asked Mort, which is, who benefits from this? Who benefits from keeping people feeling like they need to continue to feel that they're a victim and seek power, as opposed to waking up one morning and go, you know what? I hereby declare I got the power.
Yeah. Well, two obvious answers are Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson.
Oh, I was going to go for the Jews, but okay.
they're the ones who benefit from this. And, I don't know. I have a tough time. I can't say I speak for the black community. Obviously, I don't. But I think it hurts.
Maybe you should.
Maybe, yeah.
What the hell?
They need someone.
I'm gonna stay away from saying that, I think.
Put it on a car.
I think you should meet with Imus.
But having them be the ones that you go to when somebody is wrong, when a black person is wronged in the media, I just think is detrimental. And I think Imus bears a lot of fault, obviously bears a lot of fault for this. But he should have been a little more media savvy than to know to go on Al Sharpton's show.
Well, who should they go to?
Nobody. He has his own show.
Not anymore.
And says, I'm sorry. And that's fine. or invites people on. That's fine. He doesn't need to go on Al Sharpton. He kept this thing going. I mean, he went on Al Sharpton's show on Monday. He said the thing last Wednesday.
I know.
He kept it going himself. So I mean, again, he has.
And that's what we're learning. We're learning that he should have told Sharpton to go fuck himself.
Yeah.
I said I was sorry. It was inappropriate. It was wrong. It was clearly thoughtless. It was said in a moment of trying to be funny at 6 a.m. in the morning. I am sincerely apologetic.
That's another great point that people don't realize. When you get up that goddamn early,
yeah,
your brain's fried.
Of course. And at this point, this is between me and the people whose feelings I inadvertently hurt, and I'm going to do whatever I can to make amends to them, and the rest of you have nothing to do with this. End
Absolutely.
Of story. And that would have been, well, why are we so smart and he's not?
Maybe he didn't sit down and think about it like that.
Between the years of coke and booze and the early hour, he's lost whatever he had, whatever acumen.
I think the most important thing is
that
he's meeting with the team next week. I think that's what he should do, and that's the only thing he should do.
Yes.
If he offended these people, meet with them. And when I say these people, I don't mean any kind of... not derogatory in any sense. And he should talk to them.
Should he meet with the white members of the team too, or should they not be invited to attend?
Oh, of course they should be. They should attend. They should get famous just as much as
I think
everybody
just
else.
As long as they have grief counseling, it's going to be okay.
All right.
But what I also found interesting last night on NBC News was that after they play about the press conference and everything, and they play with a lot of what the coach said, and then the first comment from the team they take is one of the white girls. Now, she isn't one of the people that was supposed to be offended by this. So why? And there were two black girls.
Well, I think
spoke.
She was offended by the hoe part.
Yeah, I mean, well, maybe, but I mean, it was clearly, I think, a little more racist.
You know, it's funny. I had people say to me that they say, "Well, he called them whores," and I said, "He didn't."
No.
He goes, yeah, they call them whores. I go, no, he did not call them whores. He called them nappy-headed hoes, and a hoe is not a whore. It's very, very different, and I thought, well, we don't have a kind of cultural literacy, and that may have to do with a social divide, an economic divide, to understand that those words mean different things.
Or does it matter? And I bring you back to the case of the Philadelphia deputy mayor who said niggardly. And then had to resign
yep.
because even though it had nothing to do with anything racial at all, no one would bother to go to their Funkin' Wagnalls and figure this out.
Parviz thought Bush Baby was some kind of reference to Porch Monkey, you know, or I mean,
right.
some other horrible...
No, it's a little animal!
A cultural epithet, right? I mean, I think
yeah.
that's what he thought, which is, it's not. It has the same number of syllables. It's not the same thing. It is an animal.
Yeah. I thought it had to do with the president's daughters.
Really? We'll insert the applause in
that would be Bush hose.
I'm trying to
get
but, all, thank you.
But I find the whole thing is just if they're gonna I don't know
it's a distraction.
Who is going to feel is someone going to feel some ersatz sense of victory that the a blow has been struck for the vitality of black power when the black schools are bad, when there is still racial profiling in law enforcement, when all these things go on, but by God, we nailed Imus.
We nailed the fucking old guy.
We nailed the old stroke-prone fool.
Know. Right.
Well, one at a time, right? Go for the old ones first, they're easier targets.
This kind of side of the car, there's like a little white guy stick figure that gets painted.
Exactly.
Oh, man. Well, listen, who the fuck knows? There is an anti-intellectual component to this, and I'm not saying that what Imus said had any intellectual qualities to it, but there's an anti-intellectual component which leads me again and again to believe that we're not allowed to engage in dialogue. I heard something very funny on the Opie and Anthony show. It was Jay Moore who called in this morning, and he said that his girlfriend, Nikki Cox, who recently got canned from Las Vegas.
She did?
Yeah. She's not coming back with his name? James Khan's not coming back next season, but and she's got another show right away, so don't worry about it. She's
no, well, I like the show.
And, yeah, I do too. And she's fucking Jay Moore, so it's winning. It's all everyone's happy all around. Okay, that's my point.
But
okay, good.
Okay, but here's the thing. She said, for a long time, we knew what we weren't allowed to say. It was Carlin 7 dirty words, right? Shit, piss, cunt, fuck, motherfucker, cocksucker, and tits. Well, maybe it's time to say that there's an 8th word we can't say. You know, we're not allowed to use the N-word or any variations of the N-word. Like, let's just put it on the table. Carlin was right. It's Carlin plus one. You know, that's and that's how we need to move forward. And I thought maybe, you know, but even those words, you don't want to take away from people. But at least, all right, we got boundaries.
Right. Well, I mean, and that word wasn't even said here. I mean, and no part of it was said.
But they're pretending that it was said. I mean, yeah, that's the kind of acrimony that's been built up around this, as though he said the N-word.
That's the thing. It's the outrage. It's whether it's fake or not. And I think on some people's part, it might be real. I mean, I think the coach of the basketball team, I think she really was pissed off.
Sure.
But I don't know that the girls were. I don't know that there really was this sense of outrage.
I don't think they were smart enough to be upset.
I don't think they cared.
I was kidding. That's
oh,
a joke.
My.
That is a joke.
You know?
Even the white ones weren't smart enough to be upset. They went to Rutgers, for God's sakes.
You know, we had we had Mort Saul Ding Bangladesh. Now this. The emails we're going to get.
Tell me about your friend Rod.
What a great intro.
All right.
Rod Burnson is a local L.A. personality who filled in on the John Ziegler Show, which I used to produce. He was a fill-in host. Rod used to be an LAPD member, public information officer, I believe, and then started working in TV, doing traffic and news reporting. And about, I don't know, sometime last year, he got popped coming off a cruise in Long Beach. Two 13-year-old boys say they molested him. He molested them on the cruise. It was like some kind of weird thing that took place over 3 days, where they met him in a sauna and they kept going back to the sauna, and he tried to touch their asses or said weird sexual comments.
Exciting.
It wasn't like he didn't lock them in the sauna and then just, you know,
Flammable.
Go crazy on them. It was a story that was
let me
odd
molest you
and definitely open for interpretation. And I don't think Gopher was a part of it either.
Where's an airplane when you need one?
so he comes off the ship, and he's immediately arrested by the FBI. And, you know, again, this is another
handcuffed, and I said, "Office Obi, I don't think I could pick up any 13-year-old boys with these handcuffs on."
This is another odd L.A. news story that I have, you know, a tangential connection to.
Yes.
And so I get a call the other day from the FBI, and they want to come and interview me. And now they wouldn't tell me what it was about, but they did say it was in connection to something at KFI. And I'm going back through my little mental Rolodex thinking, you know, what the hell happened to KFI that the FBI needs to talk to me about? And there's so many things.
But they said
they were from Long Beach, and, you know, I put two and two together and realized the only FBI Long Beach connection with KFI was the Rod Burnson case. So they came over today, two officers, and
Mulder, Scully.
Mulder and
Ephraim Zimbalist Jr.
And interviewed me here. They came to my house, and because Rod filled in at KFI. He was only a fill-in host, and he only filled in on our show pretty much. So I was the one who worked with him most while he was there. So I guess I have the biggest connection to him. And, you know, it's one of those cases where the guy didn't seem like somebody who would molest kids. I don't know if there's a type. I'd be the person on the evening news saying, "Well, he seemed like such a nice guy. I don't know what happened."
Did they seem like FBI agents? I mean, we see them on television and the movies all the time, but I've never been interviewed by an FBI agent. What was that experience like?
You're sitting there and you're thinking they're reading something into everything you're saying that, you know, that's not there. Like, I touched my eyebrow at one point. I'm like, does that signal that I'm lying or something, or that I'm uncomfortable? Are they going to think that I just lied? And it was kind of odd. I mean, but it was very, you know, I did nothing wrong, and I was perfectly willing to sit
Let's
there.
Let's just get that. My client is just is stating that for the record.
And I was perfectly willing to sit them and tell them everything I knew, because there was really nothing that I didn't know. So I wasn't, you know, if they were interviewing me and I had done something wrong, it would definitely have been a lot different. I think I would have been a lot more nervous. But they came in. They were
from the sound of it, I'm not sure you could have gotten more nervous, my friend.
Really?
They're two kind of...
Are you touching your eye now?
A little bit. They're kind of dorky looking guys. I mean, nothing overly impressive. They weren't wearing sunglasses. They didn't pull out anything and wipe my mind clean or when they were.
Well, they show you ID?
They did show me ID.
All right.
And when I opened the door, there was one guy standing in front of the door.
Okay.
And another guy standing to the right side of the door, the part that didn't open.
All right.
You know, like he was hiding.
Yeah.
And then he popped out of nowhere. And they both...
Happy birthday to you.
And they both did show me their badges. I mean, I wouldn't have known if they were real or fake.
Yeah.
But I think that's not a very interesting joke if somebody is joking about coming to interview me about Rod Burnson. Not that funny. So,
So how long did the interview go on for?
15, 20 minutes.
And did they say that they would be back, or did they leave you their card? Or I mean,
they left their card. They said that they were just interviewers on the case. They're not actually agents on the case.
Gotcha.
They just come and do preliminary interviews. And
so basically, talk to everyone who worked with him, and then they're looking for someone to say, you know, I used to watch him meet up with blah, blah, blah,
right,
blah,
exactly,
blah.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. And I don't think they're finding
anybody. So you
can really
fuck this guy over if you wanted to.
What? Oh, yeah. Totally.
All right.
Well, but I mean,
so now's a good time to hit him up for a loan.
That would have come out probably.
Okay.
They did tell me that whatever I told them is going to be entered into the court record. And,
oh, okay. No one ever lies there. Oh, okay. Sorry. That's all we need.
And it'll be offered to the other side.
Did they make you sign an affidavit?
No.
Okay.
They did not.
They record you.
They did not.
Really? They didn't have a little recorder?
Not that I saw.
That you know of.
And I think they are. They have to show me by law, or maybe they don't. I don't know.
Not under Gonzalez. Not under FBI 2.0, they don't.
One guy sat there and took notes, and I asked him afterwards, you know, am I free to talk about this? Is there any legal problems if I do talk about this? And they're like, please. I mean, you're a very minimal person in a much bigger case. I don't think anybody's going to care about your testimony or what you say here.
All right.
So there's no legal problems. But, you know, I asked for several reasons, but you know, I work at a news station, and this
right.
is potentially part of a news story. So,
right,
you know, I wanted to know my boundaries, but they
and you have a website at randomshow.blogspot.com. We have not given you plugs in the last few weeks. I apologize,
and my traffic's gone way down.
I apologize. It is randomshow.blog. Well, the fact that you haven't updated your site in weeks probably.
Hey, sorry.
We'll cut that out of the show. But randomshow.blogspot.com, and you're still doing the Thursday mornings with Rosie.
I am.
All right, that's terrific.
Yes.
So we just have a few minutes left here because we ran so damn long today, and
fucking Mort Saul screws me again.
it's a long.
Tell the FBI about
people
it.
Don't know. It's a long standing feud between the two of you guys.
It is. It really is.
Mort's going to be at the Hermosa Comedy Magic Castle tomorrow night.
See, what happened is he found the Offie Coleman last week before I did, and I was so pissed.
Dreidel. They canceled Andy Barker.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
It's sad, I know.
And I've seen a couple of episodes. I really like them.
I tried to watch it last week. Didn't really do much for me.
All right.
But I tried. Entourage premiered this last week in The Sopranos. I'm interested to hear what you think of The Sopranos, because it was one of those episodes that people either really liked or they hated.
I watched The Sopranos. I've probably watched it from episode one. You know, almost 10 years ago. I've been watching it for a very long time. Is it music too loud for you there? Can you hear me?
No, all I can hear is a plane.
All right. and what I've come to understand along the way is that there's a lot of telegraphing of storyline, and
mm-hmm.
so the more bucolic the setting, the tenser I got.
Really?
I sat there and looked at the lake and looked at the
uh-huh.
ducks, and my stomach was in fucking knots, and I thought, no good can come of this.
Right, it's like Friday the 13th, when they go to the lake, you know, bad things are going to happen.
Yes, so... I'm sorry, go ahead.
The Sopranos is a show that I've come at this point to respect, and a lot of shows, if they kind of dick you around and they don't give you what you want, which a lot of people in this case, they want violence right off or somebody to be killed, and it doesn't do that. A lot of people get pissed, but I respect the show enough that, you know, they can take their little deviations and do what they would need to do to build character and plot and storylines, and this was one of those shows. A lot of people got pissed last season. You know, it opened with Tony in a coma and this weird kind of coma dreamscape thing. And people get pissed at that. They're like, this isn't the show that I want. Nobody's dying. But, I give them
the show
the
they want on DVD, and they can just go rent it at Blockbuster and go watch those episodes again. I'm with you on this. I think especially, well, you're a writer. And as a writer, you're looking for the opportunity to explore things in your characters that have not been explored before.
Sure.
If this had been the last episode, if this had been the final episode, I would have been pissed off.
Sure, absolutely.
But
and that's what people don't get. That's what makes The Sopranos such a good show, is because it's not cliche and it's not standard and
right.
not just whackings. There's substance there. And you need episodes like this to put that substance into the show.
And Chase is a writer. He's starting before The Rockford Files, right? Didn't he write for The Rockford Files?
Yes,
and he understands story arcs. And so he's got the idea where he wants to go with this. There's little telegraphy things. If you watch the very first episode of the very first season, the ducks are back again, although this time it's on the lake. I mean, that's not unintentional. Those are intentional imagery. The bell ringing on the dock is clearly reminiscent of the monk's bell that rang in the first part of the season that he heard in his dreams, right? That kind of, you know, the monk bell thing, that mm-hmm. kind of Buddhist. There's all that stuff that was dropped in there. You can find websites. I mean, I picked up probably 10% of those. That's all. This has all been written as part of an arc. Now, at the end of the day, you may go, it was a novel. I didn't really care for it. Okay, fine, but you can't read one chapter in the middle of the novel and go, I didn't like the novel.
Absolutely.
I'm with you on that.
And I figured you would be. But, you know, it really pisses me off. A lot of people come up and
you figured I would be. You called me some kind of bleeding heart liberal today. You thought I was going to support Imus's being fired. I'm so disappointed. I'm so disappointed that you would think that. I am very, very social liberal, but I'm an absolutist when it comes to the First Amendment. You know that.
Well, and one thing that I realized with this thing is a lot of broadcasters, they feel the same way. People who are in this industry and know kind of what it's like, they kind of adopt the same viewpoint, which is actually kind of weird because a lot of the TV shows seem to be going after Imus. And a lot of them, especially the NBC shows, Brian Williams is a frequent guest on Imus.
Well, I know Deal or No Deal is going after him, and that just seems...
Howie Mandel.
Yeah,
don't
really.
Fuck him.
Absolutely. You don't want to fuck
him.
With the bald guy.
Yeah.
The bald Jewish guy.
Don't fuck with him.
But he's got the 2008 VW van.
Yes, he does.
That bastard.
You watching Idol?
No, I'm not.
All right.
Never have.
Okay.
I like the first few shows where they make fun of the people and that's it.
All right. Well, there you go, my friend. So, randomshow.blogspot.com.
Yes.
And when do you another show with Sam coming up?
Yeah.
All right. You got a call. You got a call there. So get that.
We have our own simulcast starting on MSNBC next week. Check it out.
Someone's got to.
Idiots on MSNBC.
And tomorrow morning on the KSCO, what time?
6:45 a.m.
6:45 a.m.
Yes.
Outstanding.
Yes.
All right. Well, listen, thank you so very much.
Good show. Thank you.
All right.
I look forward to hearing more of yourself, buddy.
All right. We'll talk to you next week.
Take it easy.
Take care.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye. All right, we'll take a final break and come on back to the other side. Listen to Schnauz Logic, Robin Goldstein, Sean Meehan, and the end of the Parviz Finale Show. Stick around.
That's the trouble around here. Talk, talk, talk. Oh, sometimes I think I must go mad.
We'll be back with more Schnauzer Logic.
Start to realize what you bring. Damn, this guy can make me smile.
even flushing the toilet while your spouse is in the shower.
Oh, sorry.
Schnauzer Logic.
Welcome back. We're about 15 minutes into this third hour of Schnauzer Logic, I guess. We're going to wrap up here. We've kept you guys after class way too long again today. But I don't know if you get this in your local newspaper, this News of the Weird. And I picked this up. This is a Chuck Shepard syndicated feature. Andre Henry was convicted on 27 criminal counts in Philadelphia in February. For things like bank robbery, threatening a witness and police officers, despite his cocky attitude on the witness stand. After the prosecution played a recording of Henry confessing his crimes to a wire-wearing inmate, Henry was unfazed. He quickly declared the confessor was really Henry's twin brother, which turns out the prosecutor was easily able to show that he doesn't have. Welcome back, Robin Goldstein, www.schnauzerlogic.com, 206-666-6540. Love the continued phone calls and email that we get from you guys every week. It makes a huge difference to us, and we appreciate that. And it's quite a show we had today.
It was an amazing show.
Yeah, good times, good deal. Now, before we go, you may have something you want to bring up, but I got a bone to pick with you.
Okay.
All right, so we went to the Giants game last week.
Yes, we did.
We had a lot of fun. That was a terrific game.
I had a wonderful time. Thank you.
You and Sherry was able to make it to the game, and Steve Golson and I, we went and we had a good time. The Giants won that game, which was always a nice kind of thing. And while we were at, I think it was either in the car at the game, it was actually in the car. We were driving up one-on-one. We went past Candlestick Point. And you looked out and you mentioned that would reminded you of the scene from the movie Bullet.
Yes.
Right? Steve
yes.
McQueen, the movie Bullet.
Right, we were going up.
Yes.
We
was it coming
the,
back to you
it
now?
It was on the way up.
All
yes.
Right. And I said to you that I had never seen Bullet.
Right.
So Bullet's classic film, 1968. Steve McQueen, Jacqueline
Bisset,
a young Bobby Duvall.
Yes, as a cab.
As the cab driver.
Yeah. Robert Vaughn,
Robert
I believe,
Vaughn,
is the
right?
DA.
He's the DA. And Mr.
Simon Oakland
right?
as the chief.
Right. Mr. Roper.
The captain.
Mr. Roper, right? Who from the Parviz's favorite show.
Oh,
right?
yeah.
Three's Company.
Yeah, from
right?
Three's Company.
Yeah, yeah. He his name escapes me now, but he's in it. So it's got quite an interesting cast. Oh, the black doctor.
Yeah,
George
Sanford Brown.
George Sanford
Brown.
Sanford Brown. Right? Plays a black
as the,
doctor
as
at
the,
68 in UCSF, right?
Yeah.
The, right, who, so...
Yeah,
so it's got
cardiac surgeon.
Incredible cast and the whole thing. So I went and rented it because I'd never seen it, and I rented it. And everybody knows about the chase scene in Bullet, right? That's one of maybe the classic car chase scene, set the stage for all the others. And so I rented it over, and I watched it over the weekend. I have never been so bored in my entire life.
Wow.
I was fighting.
Not what I was expecting.
I was fighting to stay awake. If Steve McQueen got paid $1 for every line of dialogue, I don't think he would have...
Well, he'd make $6.
He wouldn't have had enough money to buy lunch. This is the most minimalistic... Nothing happens. No one has any bad attitude. No one has any attitude. This is a surrealistic existential police story.
Well, I told you that it was existential. Did I not tell you it was Sark's
Bullet? I don't
know
what bullet? That means. Yes.
I believe that I
didn't understand what that meant at the time.
But now you do. Well, and it was horrifying. There was no exit, so to speak.
Oh, my God. So
I guess you dig it or you don't.
You dig it.
I dig it. I watch Bullet probably once a year.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
I love Bullet. There's something about...
What is it?
I can't tell you. There is a kind of... It's... To me, that vacancy that you felt, that boredom, reads as intensity.
Okay.
I think that that's all I can say. If everywhere you felt boredom... you alternately, you know, in some alternate reality, you were feeling that was intensely powerful. That's what I was feeling.
It was like a movie full of establishing shots.
It was.
It's one establishing shot to the next. It's long telephoto shots.
Yeah.
And McQueen is barely moving. He seems completely uninterested in the case. it's not like the police procedurals from that period of time didn't have any kind of intensity to go on, because they did. Mm-hmm. I mean, they came from the kind of, hey, you guys, you know, the kind of Cagney things, and then they sort of fell over into the Clint Eastwood kind of things, and the Dirty Harry and the John Buck, you know what I'm talking about. Dirty Jack, Big Jack, Billy Jack, Dirty Jack Buck, which became Midnight Cowboy. So I don't understand. Was this considered one of his best things?
Well, for me, I consider it McQueen's, you know, finest performance, and it is incredibly minimalist. What Robin is saying is absolutely true. There really, he has about six lines of dialogue, but there is a scene. Take the scene that Steve and I were talking about with the old, the old photo fax machine.
Yeah,
where you're waiting for results of some fax to be transmitted, and based on whose face basically was going to be seen on this, our hero Steve McQueen would be in trouble or not in trouble.
Right.
And we find, and there are characters who want to crucify him in the room while
this is
happening.
I only knew this by reading the summation on Wikipedia, by the way. I had no idea from watching the fucking movie what had happened, so afterwards I read Wikipedia so I could talk intelligently about it today. I'm just copping to it.
Okay. Well, that scene, I think if you are disengaged, is an incredibly boring scene of watching someone put paper in a machine, watching a little drum spin around, and then for a long time,
the paper.
This is done real time, and then to see the paper come out of the machine and the thing being torn open. But if you're into the story, because there's very little dialogue in that scene, if any, but in the story, if you're into it, it's incredibly intense. Because Robert Vaughn, the DA, is going to crucify McQueen, the investigating cop, if the wrong information comes out of this machine. But it doesn't, and we see Vaughn's frustration. It's all behind the eyes. It's all behind the eyes. I can see I'm losing.
I will tell you that the frustration was certainly behind my eyes. The other thing that I... But don't
listen to him. See Bullet.
Well, you can rent it. It's worth a rental. You know. Well, here's the other thing that I thought was very, very interesting. So I had never seen the entire chase scene, right? Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, okay, this is the quintessential cinematic chase scene that all other chase scenes are based upon. So I thought, okay, fine. And in fact, you can actually read the chase scene online as well and see what streets they go down, and you can kind of get a mental picture, because of course they're all over the city.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
No.
But if you live in San Francisco, you realize those streets don't connect to each other, but that's fine. Here's what I thought was interesting about the chase scene. There's no music playing under the chase scene. I didn't know how to respond to a chase scene without music telling me what my emotional response was supposed to be at any particular point. Can you imagine the Matrix chase scenes without any music under them?
It would be really startling. There is music, though, just prior to the chase scene. One of the mistakes people make when they show scenes from Bullet where they show the chase scene, they show the chase scene from the beginning of the high-speed pursuit. But the chase scene is actually much longer. The chase scene begins when McQueen realizes he's being tailed.
Yes.
And there's some ordinary traffic action.
That's right.
And they turn, you know,
they're
some
in the Charger
turns.
And he's in the Mustang,
he's
right?
He's in the Mustang, yeah. Right.
And they're in the Charger.
Right. And there's a wonderful scene where it's just a shot where the guys, the bad guys, the heavies who are from Chicago, the muscle, has lost McQueen. And they're driving around. McQueen has given him the slip. And then you see the great shot in their rear view mirror where McQueen's car rises into the rear view mirror. Now McQueen's on them.
Right.
And they put on, everybody puts on their seat belts. You know, those old lap belts. Everyone's strapping in. And the car's gone. You know, and then the music stops.
And then apparently he upshifts. Easily 22, 24 times.
Yeah.
He never downshifts. That's the most amazing transmission in the world.
It is. But there's a beautiful shot. I don't know if you remember this, but there's a great shot. I'm not a huge fan of car chases in general, but Steve McQueen overshoots a turn.
Yes.
And the guys go around a turn, and Steve McQueen overshoots it. And then he throws his car into reverse.
Yeah.
And he punches it so hard, the rear tires can't get traction.
Yeah.
And the whole ass end of the car is hopping up and down as smoke just billows from the, you know, from the rear wheels. And you can see just the torque in that engine. And the whole car is, the car's going to shake apart. It's being put under so much load.
I think you need to do a commentary for that scene that we can put up online. And then people would, and then, so we'll have to watch that scene outside the studio, but we'll watch it here in the studio, and you can comment on it, sort of a frame by frame. It wouldn't be the director's commentary, it'd be a guest commentary, much like the Parviz Vitali show. All right. We got a couple of minutes. Will you, you got anything on your mind this week?
This week, for those of you around the world, there was a big case about a year ago that broke where a college lacrosse team was...
Duke.
The Duke lacrosse team. I believe they were national champions at that point. They team members went to a party and allegedly raped a black stripper. There was a horrible investigation conducted by the DA and the police. There was an incredible rush to judgment in the media. And just yesterday or today, I'm not sure which, the state AG, I think, stepped in and said, you're all going free. All sorts of exculpatory evidence was suppressed or overlooked by the local DA, and a real... shame. A real national shame, I think. A failure in our justice system.
You think they were guilty?
No.
Oh.
No. I mean, there seemed to be... The evidence that would clear them seems incredibly compelling.
Yeah. So, what you're saying, the shame is this rush to judgment that we need...
Right.
We always know who the bad guy is.
Right. You know, I think that it was just a terrible thing to have happen.
So maybe we should all watch Bullet every night. Maybe that would change the way we think about things.
I just love the... I thought it was intense.
All right. Well, listen, we don't have to agree on everything.
No, we do. We do.
And that, I'm all right with that. I'm glad that I finally saw it, because it's certainly something that...
It's a classic American crime film.
And has influenced countless directors, writers, actors along the way.
And if you want...
I don't think there is anybody like McQueen today. Who would be the closest to...
This is an interesting question. Kevin Costner. When
you know, you were going to say Kevin Bacon.
Kevin Bacon. Kevin Costner. The story of The Bodyguard, which was film made about a decade ago.
With Whitney Houston.
With Whitney Houston and Kevin Costner. That's right. She, that script is an old one. It had been hanging around Hollywood for a long time. Originally...
For Steve McQueen.
For Steve McQueen.
Wow.
And it never quite came together.
It's too bad.
With Steve McQueen.
Clearly died too young. I mean, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Lung cancer or some...
It was some enormous tumor in his belly. I'm not sure where
tragic.
It started.
Just awful. Tragic, yeah.
But yeah, they gave Costner the that kind of Caesar cut. Yeah. And, you know, for the hairstyle. And they put him in there to try and recreate...
I mean, I would see Steve McQueen's career would have ended on a CSI. You know, he would have. He's a better Horatio than Horatio.
Wow, I went there.
Is that where you went?
I went right there.
Yeah, I mean that's it, right?
Horatio looks like he's faking. Steve McQueen.
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
Yes, he does. All right. Well, thank you, my friend.
Thank you. What a great show.
Great show. Thanks all of you who listened. Of course, our very, very, very special thanks to Mort Saul, who is our guest today, and our guest Jason Nathanson, who joins us every week, and to Sean Meehan and to Parviz Vitali. And we once again want to thank Ross Schaefer and Jan Karam, who helped book Mort for us. And until next week, I love you, Mom. I love you, Dad. I miss you both a whole lot. Show up. Pay attention, tell the truth, and don't be attached to the outcome. Tell your friends, and have yourself a great week. We'll be back next week with more hilarity. Take care. Bye.
This is over now, and you just got to deal with it.
I want you to know it's over.
It's over, Johnny. It's over!
It's over, Harvey. I'm sorry. I need to get on with my life.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Elvis has left the building.
Vagina.